Hey, let's start the show.
Welcome to This Is Only a Test. This is March 9th, 2011. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, we've got the WAN cast. Norman Chan, how are you doing?
We don't have a WAN cast.
We have a Wung cast.
Yeah.
It's too bad Gary's name doesn't start with A. Could you be A Gary, Gary Whitta?
For what purpose?
So we have a WAN cast here.
Oh, that's right. We don't have...
We're vowel free.
It's Wung.
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 Norm, that's a spiffy new jacket you're wearing today.
It's a thermal.
Is it thermal because it's cozy?
No, keeps you warm. And also because I don't want to wear a cardigan because I'm a dirty hipster.
So like Dave, basically is what you're saying?
Yeah.
I wear cardigans, but only at home is my rule on cardigan wear, never in public. Is that keeping the sickness bundled up inside you?
Absolutely.
I'm finally starting to feel better. I'm pleased to report it was hit touch and go there this weekend.
So there's been a lot of it about. I hear a lot of people complaining, tweeting about being sick this past week.
GDC last week, fucking gamers. Oh, there's nothing filthier than a convention full of professional game developers.
Yeah, and you got PAX coming up this week as well now, which is more PAX POX.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not going to PAX given the cold and flu season that's hitting the East Coast right now. But how are you doing, Gary? What have you been away for a couple weeks?
It feels like I've been away for a long time.
Well, there's been a sea change since you last left.
You don't realize how quickly technology moves until you're out of the loop for a couple of weeks, as I have been. I've been traveling and working and not really following things. Now I feel like a guy who's woken up from cryogenic suspension in the future. Yeah. Like, oh my God, there's an iPad 2?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the best thing about it is the case.
Smart covers.
Okay,
I'm sure we'll be discussing
we'll talk
this
about
in
that
depth.
Yes. Yeah, later. But yeah, I mean, you came in today and you said, "Hey, can I see the Zoom?
I haven't seen this. Is old news to you by now. It's new to me."
And it like the new wore off of that faster than anything I've ever tested.
You know, when I can't even figure out where the power button is, that the device is not making a good impression on me.
You got to be careful. You're dangerously near curmudgeon when you start complaining about where the button is.
Having
you
said
struggled
that,
with that for quite a while.
Dear Mr. President, there are two
I know,
many
it was
states.
It was just weird. I have no idea how long I may have continued to struggle with it. But had you not, I mean, you told me where it was. I mean, I could still be here looking for that button.
I could see you. You were like, you were contemplating smashing it on the ground.
I was like an ape from 2001.
Exactly. So what do you think about it though?
Having said that, having spent like 5 or 10 minutes playing with it, I kind of like it. I haven't spent enough time with it yet to see the many problems that you say it has.
It's not that it's bad per se. It's just not exciting. And it's inconsistent.
And it's expensive.
And it is pretty expensive, yeah.
But, the browser is nice. As Norm points out, the tabbed browsing is very good.
Yeah.
It's a great Gmail experience.
Yes.
The YouTube browser is really nice.
Absolutely.
And it is nice to finally see Android working on a tablet as it, you know, should. And
not kind of stretch
like,
its legs.
Not, yeah, not just the phone version that's been stretched out like on the Tab and these other wannabe tablets. So it's the best. I think it's pretty, again, it's partly because of the paucity of competition, but I think it's the best non-iPad tablet out there, right?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty low bar, that.
Yeah, because I mean, where do you go after that?
Right, the Galaxy Tab.
The Tab,
is the
which
next
is shite.
Yeah. And then from there, it's to, well, some other stuff we'll talk about in a minute, but like the super janky stuff, like the Nook Color tabletized, you know, converted to run Honeycomb and sorts of other crazy shit.
But it's nice now that, you know, we said before, if someone came to you and said, I really want to get into tablets, I love the idea, but like for whatever reason, you know, Steve Jobs ran over my cat. Like I just don't want anything to do with Apple. I'm Apple phobic, as many people are, and that's their right. You know, before we would have said, just wait, just don't get anything.
Yeah,
right now.
You're better off.
I think now you could say, hey, if you want to spend the money, the Zoom is actually pretty decent.
Well, and I mean, the Wi-Fi version's coming soon. When that hits, it'll be a little more interesting, I think, for more people, because that'll knock a couple $100 off the price.
And as we've talked about, and as I'm sure we will talk about today, even though with the looking at the iPad 2 options, the 3G side of it is less and less important to me.
Well, so let's jump right into it, because iPad 2, it's Wednesday before iPad 2 launch. It's what I'm thinking about. Norm,
nope.
Not on your mind.
Not.
Gary,
the new on that.
Already gone.
Already gone.
Wait until he gets one in his
hands. When he sees it, if it's a speed bump like the 3G to the 3GS was, because I've heard this whole story before from Norm.
Yep. I'm going to put $20 on it.
I don't need a 3GS.
Not getting
Norm is too. Right behind me on this track. I went from, and I publicly declared, I will not upgrade to an iPad 2. When it became clear, when the rumors started to clarify that there was not going to be the high-res display, which was what would have been the big selling point for me, I was like, well, if it's just a spec bump, and
who cares?
And it's just a little bit thinner.
Yep.
I have an iPad. Do I really need anything? And then I saw it. I didn't see it in the flesh, but I've looked at the videos and the keynote and all that stuff. And I'm like, well, and people are saying, well, like the speed bump is significant.
Yeah.
Like it's a big difference in terms of the snappiness of it. And the iPad's already pretty snappy. Certainly, again, I look at the Zoom and these other tablets and they feel very janky,
well,
performance-wise compared to the iPad, and this will be the next step up.
So the thing, I mean, this has been my long-term complaint with the Android stuff, and after using the Atrix some more, even with the dual-core processor, which is the same processor in the Zoom, the problem with Android isn't that it's slow, because when it's running right, everything's awesome, and it's really fast and smooth. The problem is that sometimes, for no apparent reason, there's hitches. It just stops. It's almost like you always hear people, PC gamers, complaining about micro stuttering in games where you have just a split second hitch, every 10, 20 frames, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing in Android. It just, once you've gotten used to the kind of high level, super smooth iOS experience, it's hard to go back.
Yeah,
to something
micro stutters become very jarring.
Yeah, I mean it's very, especially when the micro stutter is while you're trying to you have a split second to answer a call, or you're in the car, you're doing something reckless and using your phone while you're driving or trying to get a map up or something. When it stutters while you're doing that, it's really, really bad. Like more so than micro stuttering in a video game or something like that that might cause you to be shot and killed or whatever.
So the big performance increase of the iPad 2, because it seems like a bigger increase than 3G to 3GS was.
Well, I've heard different things from people. So some people have said that you didn't really notice the performance boost in like core UI experience. So flipping from screen to screen, loading up mail, stuff like that, you don't notice. You really – Mark McCluskey at Wired said that the places he noticed it were in the photo app. So when browsing a large gallery of photos or something like that, something that I never, ever do. And other kind of graphically intensive areas were where he said that he had noticed the boost. If that's the case, it's a less exciting performance boost. However, if it actually comes over into the core UI and scrolling in browsers and stuff like that, that is a very exciting thing.
That's where you notice it just in everyday tasks.
Super sexy. I think it's fast enough right now. I think the problem was memory. And if it's still 256 megs of RAM, if web pages are still going to
Yeah, the tab browsing seems like something that Apple needs to catch up
Can't
on.
Can't do tab browsing. It's still less memory than the iPhone. Scrolling down half a page.
I mean, is it really that difficult to store more than a couple of web pages in memory?
Well, I think that Apple debunked the 256 megabytes of RAM thing. I think they didn't say how much memory it has.
They did not debunk it.
Okay.
But we do know that true tabbed browsing is not in Safari. We know that.
Well, but I mean iOS 5 will come sometime this summer or fall and that'll I mean, who knows what that will bring.
And then again, never underestimate the power of the form factor and the slimness of it. I think they seem to have done a remarkable job getting this thing much thinner.
Well, 3 ounces, who fucking cares though?
The weight drop is still going to feel quite heavy.
Right.
But thinner than an iPhone 4, that is significant.
It's 1.5 pounds to
1.2. It's 3 ounces.
No,
1.3.
You know, and Jobs says, even though that doesn't sound like a lot,
it's 3 ounces.
It does feel like that remains to be seen. We'll decide.
I think the thinness is less of a
I'm saying that Norm is right behind me. Once you and a couple of other guys are walking around the office with iPad 2s, his heavy, slow brick of an iPad 1 is going to start to bug him.
Absolutely not.
That's my fear. Well, you say that
at this point, he's locked in. He's made the
– That money is saved for
iPhone 5.
MacBook Air.
Oh, MacBook Air.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting. Part of the reason why I said I didn't feel the need to get an iPad 2 is my iPad 1 use had dropped off a little bit since I got my new 11-inch MacBook Air, which I love, and I use that a lot now. But sometimes the form factor is still not ideal for, couch computing, and the iPad is still better at that.
Yeah.
I busted out my old iPad last night because last night was my last day with it.
That was your victory lap.
I'm now iPadless because I sold my iPad 1 to Giant Bomb's Ryan Davis.
You gave him a smoking deal, by the way.
He got a good deal.
Yeah.
I think it was the right deal.
You think everybody wins?
It was, he got a very good deal. And I got enough money to feel like it's not costing me that much to upgrade to the next one.
Well, there is that. I mean, and you got more than you would get for that iPad. So anyway, yeah, iPad 2. You're gonna get in line, or are you just going to order it on Friday afternoon?
Remains to be seen.
I think they'll deliver on Tuesday.
I'm going to start sussing out the lines on Friday morning. And if it feels like lines are already building early in the day, I don't want to be that guy again. I'll just order online and get it Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah,
one reason every year to sell your old Apple products, like your iPhone, take the $100 hit and then get the next version up is because of the battery also. Your battery over time was great, and it'll cost you $100 just to get that replaced. Mm-hmm. So to get a refresh every year on a new battery in a new product.
Yeah, if you can pay $200 for a new product and a new battery.
Especially on the iPhone, because it's subsidized by the carrier. If you can keep it in pretty good condition by the end of the year, by the time the iPhone 5 comes out, for example, I will, I could have the option to sell this. When I went from 3G to 3GS, I sold my unlocked 3G to a guy on Craigslist, and it basically paid for the 3GS.
Well, especially with the phones, when you can sell the unlocked ones, since they're hard to get.
Yes.
With the iPhone 4, it'll be a little bit harder, since there's no unlocked, untethered jailbreak that unlocks as well, right?
Yeah, but I think I'm probably just going to hand this one down anyway.
Yeah.
I'll probably give this one away.
Okay.
My girlfriend has a 3G. Like, we did it probably.
She's just
when I got the 4, she got my 3GS.
Yeah.
And then when I'll get the 5, she'll get the 4.
So the thing that always worries me about selling Apple stuff is that I'll get the Lethal Weapon thing, where it's my last night. I'm using the phone the last time. And I go out to the car to
two
days from retirement. Boom, drop and smash.
Well, I've had a couple of serious drops. I dropped it again since the last time we talked. And
oh boy,
you can see there the little a little ding. But I'm every time it drops, I'm like, I have that moment, like, no.
Yeah.
But I don't have a serious crack or anything. The build quality on this thing's pretty damn good.
So you're skipping 3G and you're just getting the 64 gig, black or white? This is the other question.
Well, so part of the reason why I felt like I got a good deal is, so Ryan bought my old – when the iPad first came out, I went crazy and got the top of the line model.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
I got the 64 gig 3G. And what I discovered over the course of the last year is I don't really need 64 gigs. I was basically using maybe 20, 25 gigs. So it's close to full, but even with a bunch of stuff on it, I don't need. If I actually exercise like proper, hard
drive management. If you deleted shit occasionally.
Yeah, right now it's kind of bloated because I don't need to delete anything. But if I actually had only had the stuff I needed on there, 32 gigs would be more than enough for me. And I don't feel like I need the 3G because over the course of the last year, I maybe used it 2 or 3 times. I think you said the same thing. You hardly use 3G on the iPad.
I have 2 gigs available on my iPad right now.
On 64?
My 64 gig.
Right, but again, you're not exercising any discipline with what you put on.
No, and
right?
I downloaded a 1 gigabyte frog dissection app last
exactly.
week.
Exactly. I mean, I'll happily get the 32 gigs and just be more prudent about what I sync onto it.
Yeah.
And the 3G, I didn't use it very much in the last year. And now that the personal hotspot is going to be available or is available today because 4.3 just
came
today,
out supposedly. Yeah.
I'm happy to go with that and get my Wi-Fi connection from my phone.
Even paying the tethering charge.
Well, I did the math in my head. I think even if I pay for the tethering every month, you've got $130 is the 3G hardware premium right away.
Right.
And then plus whatever additional fees, $20 a month, if you use it 2 or 3 times, that basically ends up costing you what the yearly tethering.
And you drive to LA some, you're in hotels a lot, so you can use it with your MacBook or whatever.
Yeah, and
else.
I can put it on my MacBook. I mean, I was in a hotel this past week and the hotel Wi-Fi was kind of shitty.
Yeah.
But my 3G connection was pretty decent. If I'd have had that hotspot, I could have fed my iPad and my MacBook and, anything else.
Now, see, if there was a Verizon LTE iPhone 4 that you could do the hotspot on, I would totally be on board.
I know, but isn't
plan.
The problem that, where do you really have an LTE connection?
Well, in big cities.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that would be great.
I mean, by this time next year, it'll be everywhere.
I think that'll be the iPhone 6.
iPhone 7. iPhone 6G.
I'm just very disappointed with the iPad 2.
Norm.
All right, go on. So come on, let's hear it.
But I think it was a half-ass upgrade. It's very typical that Apple upgraded just enough so they think that people could justify buying it, but it's not like a must.
What do you
upgrade.
Feel like they should have done?
Just two things: the memory, at least 512 megs of RAM,
but we don't know for sure that that isn't the case, right?
We don't.
The camera is crap.
Is that, so? You
Absolute
tweeted
crap.
Earlier in the week the camera is not the iPhone 4 camera, but it's the iPod Touch
and
camera.
It's pretty much proven.
Almost certainly that.
But it is 720p, camera. Correct?
Well,
for video.
That's a bad.
For video, it's like the iPod Touch 720p. It's bad 720p.
Oh, so not – okay, yeah. So not as good as
– talking about a camera, the rear camera on a tablet that takes photos at lower resolution than this actual screen of the
right.
tablet.
Right.
Like 960 by 720.
So you won't be wanting to do photography and stuff on this?
No, which –
who's the camera is the least exciting thing about any
I really feel like they could have done away with the rear camera entirely and just put a FaceTime camera in there, because that is where the applications will be. FaceTime conferencing is what they focused on. They at the keynote they barely talked about what you could do with the rear camera other than, you know, as the rear view for FaceTime.
The rear camera is there just for apps, for alternate reality.
It'd be nice for augmented reality and
reality stuff,
but
yeah.
I feel like, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I kind of feel like Apple now sets the bar so high that people's expectations get carried away, and when they don't completely cure cancer with every new product, that's somehow fucked up.
5 megapixel camera in the back,
but it's
and
a shitty
and it's an $800 and it's an $800 product.
That's not because of the camera. The camera's cheap.
But I mean, here's the thing. I have the iPhone 4 camera. The iPhone 4. I've used a lot of phone cameras in the last year, even compared to the 8 megapixel camera and then in the HTC Droid Incredible and
not
the other cameras.
It's for people who buy an iPad, it's big purchase, and that's their primary computer.
But nobody's going to use that fucking camera to take pictures. It's not like you can just whip that out of your pocket at Disney World.
I think people are going to use the camera. They're going to want to.
I mean, the thing is,
then don't put a camera on there.
Well, you put it there for apps so that you can use it for crazy, kooky, lunatic apps like the Yelp thing and all that stuff. I mean, I understand what you're saying. It is a half-assed camera.
Total half-ass.
Right. I mean, I said the same thing about the iPod Touch. It was a lame camera to put in the iPod Touch too. I mean, the thing is, I'd rather have a camera than no camera. And if they can't fit the good camera in,
I don't think it's because of that. I think it's just
in an ideal world, I would have liked the higher resolution display. I understand why that's not viable right now. I think a significant performance increase. The significant improvement in the form factor and the size and everything else and the cameras for 1 year after launch, I think it's a perfectly more than adequate, very good upgrade to this product. I think for the
iPad class product, I wanted more. Yeah.
I'm not, I feel like your complaints are like you wanted a better camera. I feel like the camera's not even that significant a part of it.
I mean, here's...
And you're complaining about memory, which we don't even know what the deal is there yet.
Here's the thing. If it weren't for the Apps of the Week segment, which we do every week, and I would love... I want to have direct feed video out of, I would not be buying an iPad 2. I mean, I'm buying an iPad 2 specifically for that.
Right. And like I said, even I'm kind of on the fence. I'm like, do I really need this?
Right.
You know, fortunately, I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I can afford it.
Right.
I mean, it's a business expense for me anyway. I can, I use my iPad for work, so my company pays for it.
For watching movies?
For watching movies, and I also use it. Like, for example, when I was just in LA this week pitching a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I have all my notes on little flashcards that I keep on my iPad. It's a very good device for that. I found all kinds of useful ways to use it.
Well, and it'll be good, you know, if you do presentations and stuff off of it too. You'll be able to plug it in with that.
I mean, I've been in so many meetings now where people want to show me concept art or things that they're working on, and it's always on their iPad.
Yeah.
So that comes, they can slide right through and do a little PowerPoint, you know, just sitting at, you know, a dinner table. It's right there. So that kind of stuff is great. And like I said, I was with you. I wasn't going to get it, but look, yeah, you're right. I am an Apple fanboy. There's no point trying to deny it. I've made my peace with that. You know, the sexy factor of the new slit. I've always got to have the new hotness, whatever. Like, right. I'm a sucker for it every time.
You don't want to go into a meeting and everybody else has iPad 2s and you have an iPad 1.
There's no way I would have pulled full freight for it if I didn't feel that I was going to get a good deal on the old one. So, like, I got, you know, a decent amount, you know, I sold. Because I'm not going to use the cases anymore because everything's new.
Yeah.
So Ryan got all my cases and my dock and all my accessories.
He got a fire sale.
He got a great deal. And I said I got enough to mitigate the purchase. I feel like I'm only paying a couple hundred bucks for the new one.
So I've got
I am downgrading. I'm going from the 64 gig 3G.
Yeah. To the 32 gig.
So I'm right sizing. All I need is 32 gig and Wi-Fi.
So you're up. That's a good. You did well.
Yeah.
So here's my question for you. I have two questions. First, white or black?
I've asked myself that. You know, I went from
that's racist.
I went from I like the look of the white one.
Yes.
But come on. It's nice that they have it, but it's not for me.
You don't want the bezel jumping out at you.
There's that. But the more I looked at it, and I think when I see it in the flesh, I'll be like, oh, it actually looks kind of like – it kind of looks like a picture frame. There's an elegance to the white one. It goes well with the different colors of the smart covers. But the reality is I'm going to get the black one. As people have said, if you're using it in low light and you've got that white bezel – It's gonna stand out.
It's gonna be like the surface of the fucking sun.
There's a chance it may turn yellow.
Yeah.
You know, as the white MacBooks did. The black is the way to go.
I think they'd probably replace it if it turned yellow.
I think the white one will be very popular, and the fact that it's new and it makes it look newer than the old one. People can see the white bezel instantly, know you have an iPad 2. That's great, but no, I'm gonna go with the black.
So then the other question is, do you get Apple Care when you buy a new iPad? Because when you get Apple Care, that's you saying, hey, I'm going to keep this for 2 years.
No, because I know I'm going to upgrade.
You're going to upgrade next year.
When the iPad 3 comes out.
Exactly.
But Norm pointed out, it's really interesting that there's 18 different SKUs. I'm going to have to go in there and say, I think
it's 16, actually.
It's 18.
18.
Because there's three Verizon, three AT&T times two colors.
Three Verizon, three AT&T, and three Wi-Fi.
There's nine different configurations in two colors.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. There are 18.
So I'm going to have to go in there and say, I want a black 32 gig Wi-Fi. If you want 3G, you'd have to say, I want, say, a white 64 gig 3G Verizon.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So it actually makes me wonder, even though I'm sure they've got plenty of units, that there's a good chance that because
they've been making these for months.
They have to split in so many different ways, though. You know, like if you want, say, I'm worried that the popular one, like black 32 gig 3G Wi-Fi, which is probably one of the more popular SKUs.
I would assume
that might run out quite quickly.
Yeah, you might end up with white after all.
Well, they know the distribution, right? They'll go mostly 16 gigs, fewer 32. And
yeah, I think the 32 is the most popular, and then the 16 is the second most popular.
I want to say 16 is the most popular.
Maybe it is.
That $500 price point is what most
people like the entry level price.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, if you're just running apps, you don't care about media. If you're not going to load it up with video and stuff, 16 gigs is more than enough, assuming you're not downloading a whole shitload of 500 megabyte magazines.
What's the capacity on this, by the way?
32 gigs.
32 gigs.
On the Zoom.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's the thing that they fucked up on is they're charging, you know, because there's no 16 gig model. You know, they could have shaved $100 theoretically off of. I mean, that's what Apple does.
Right.
It's so not like that extra 16 gigs of flash is costing $100.
So wait, 32 gigs.
You're in reverse though.
32 gigs 3G is compare on the iPad side would be what, the 729?
It's 730, yeah.
Right. So this is actually only $70 more expensive. It's not.
But the problem is there's not a lower model.
Right. They don't offer anything.
Yeah. I don't think they could. They couldn't cut $100 off and have a 16 gig.
Yeah.
Well, I think the Wi-Fi one's going to be $200 cheaper, right?
It is.
$600. So we've talked about iPad a lot. Other iOS 4.3, of course.
Do you want to discuss the smart covers?
We can talk about smart covers. Are you getting one? Polyurethane or leather?
I think they're kind of cool. I think a lot of people – I still think that the third-party market is going to be very strong because there are people that do want to cover the whole thing up.
Yes.
They don't want the back to get scratched. But I think it's very clever design, and I think it's great the way that they clearly designed the two products in tandem.
Well, I think what we'll see is that people like the Dodo case people and all the people that make those book kind of cases will also integrate the magnets in their cases
right.
So that the smart aspect of the cover flips. You know, so you can open it up and it turns on automatically, which is kind of – seems like the laziest thing ever.
It's
also
great, and it does the two things that I want it to do, which is the two stand configurations. That's what I like to
add. The stand Apple configurations case. Are awesome.
Yeah.
I mean I can see that being a real selling point, and it won't add the bulk that the other cases –
The only question might be if I want to pay the premium for the executive leather.
Well, I'm going to get both. Just so we can see what the difference is.
Yeah,
I think the leather is the one you want.
I hate it when I have to choose between colors though, because I can never decide. I'm the worst.
Blue, always go blue or orange. Go big. You don't want.
Do they have a lime green?
I think they do.
They go with that.
The plastic ones come in bright colors. Yeah, and the other ones like
the leather ones have the
slate
executive
gray.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like graphite.
Yeah, exactly.
And like burgundy.
Yes.
Mahogany.
Yes. Yes, they look rich. Rich Corinthian leather.
Yes, exactly. The executive colors.
Do you know that there is no such thing as Corinthian leather?
No, but
Ricardo Montalban made that up on the spot.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
I might get the black leather might be the way to go.
To me, though, the killer thing is the HDMI out mirroring. I mean, that
is. Do you think that's something that will be used a lot?
I think that it'll be used more than you think. I mean, if you think about it, if you're a college kid and you actually have money to buy an iPad, you know, you have a desktop and an iPad instead of a netbook or a laptop or something.
Yeah.
You bring that in, you can do presentations and stuff on it.
No college kid has just
a desktop and an iPad. I bet there's laptop and an iPad, whatever. Real computer and an iPad.
So it'd be good for presentations, for like keynote stuff. good for. I mean, in the video they showed a school teacher using.
Well, and just hooking it up to your TV. I mean, you go to the parents' house. You want to show some pictures.
Yeah, but you can.
Well, yeah, theoretically, okay, you can AirPlay if you have an Apple TV.
Yeah. Which is the preferential way to do it.
Yes.
Their demo was kind of janky, though. With I think it was a student using it to show, like, the Planets app.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like, is that your project? Yeah, I downloaded an app, and here it is.
Well, that's where we're coming. It's a world about not knowing things, but knowing how to find things.
What do you think about that whole when they were showing, like, the year of the iPad, now the iPad has changed the world? The guy was saying, like, test scores, math scores have gone up since kids have been using the iPad.
I'm making flappy hand mouths.
It's magical.
I think that they did a couple of goofy things in that presentation. There were that Samsung was a well established misquote.
The oh,
Samsung
really?
Quote, yeah.
Which the I one mean, about it, how the ship out was the sell through was small.
Yeah, it was a misquote that was very clearly a Samsung like fixing a problem. I think, but I mean, still, it's skeezy to use a misquote. And the other thing is saying that they were the first dual core. They're going to be the first dual core tablet ship in quantity.
Uh huh.
I mean, the Zoom has been out for a couple of weeks. I don't think that you can. I mean, they've sold what 2 million units on that. Isn't that what the published number is? I don't think you can say that that's not in quantity. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Motorola's not published numbers.
You know, they do sometimes, you know, get carried away. But I think the big picture argument that he was making that their competitors have been.
Well, scrambling.
Flummoxed is the word he used. I think is largely true.
I think that's absolutely correct. I mean, we've talked about this before. But, I mean, basically that tablet market went from a standing start for everybody but Apple last March 23rd.
Yeah.
You know, everybody started at 0 point and had to figure out what the fuck
this would not
do.
Where the iPad never made this product here, the Zoom would not exist. Nor would the tablet.
Not
nor
in the
nor
form
would
that
any
we're seeing right now, yeah. No. No, I don't think Motorola would have rolled a tablet. I think HP probably would have eventually done one.
About the iPad Oculus last year. iPad Oculus last year.
I think, you know, to go back to whether or not this is a big enough upgrade, I think it's more than enough for Apple to continue to dominate this space handily. You know, Jobs, I think, made a good point when he said, even if they did nothing this year, even if they just continue to make iPad 1s for the next 12 months, 12 months from now, they would probably still be number one.
Yeah, because they control, you know, all the supply chain.
Right, because and again, this is what we've said before: is that these Motorola, like this Motorola product, and the Playbook, and these other things that we're going to see, are catching up to the iPad One, and now, in fact, they're going to be. And the reality is, they're actually going to be competing against that too.
I mean, so that rolls into the next thing we're going to talk about. But at GDC this week, or last week rather, we got some hands-on time with the Playbook, which was the first time I'd really spent any time with it. I saw it kind of over somebody's shoulder at E3 a couple of times.
Yeah.
But at GDC, Norm was playing games. Like the performance on that thing and the experience is the level of smooth and flawless that I have expect from iOS devices. I mean, I think
cool.
I think RIM more than Motorola and Google really nailed that. I mean, of the tiny amount of stuff that we saw at GDC, nailed the smoothness and that experience has to be exactly right on and fantastic. Or else it's very jarring on these types of devices.
I mean, I think that's great. I still think that product is DOA.
Unless it can run Android apps.
Yeah, if they can run Android apps, that's pretty hot.
Well, I mean, I thought was a significant story in the last, because I've been following the news while I've been traveling, that BlackBerry Messenger is now going to be available for iOS and Android devices. I mean, if that's not a white flag or surrender, I don't know what is.
Well, I think this is one of those things. This is an ecosystem thing, right? I mean, Lawrence Lessig says the exciting stuff happens at the edges of the platform. By making your platform bigger, it makes your platform more valuable. So by opening BBM up to other devices, yes, they don't require a BlackBerry to use that phone. But BBM as a service to me, a BlackBerry customer, is much more valuable if I can talk to you and Norm on it instead of just –
Yeah, that's nice.
Just
I mean, if I've got friends who have
two friends who have BlackBerry.
If I've got friends who have I personally don't know anyone who has a BlackBerry at this point, but
right.
if they
yeah.
did and they have BBM,
yeah.
I can now.
Well,
I guess now I can talk to them.
BBM
is cross platform now. Right?
Yeah, BBM is kind of a hot thing in the corporate world too. Like a lot of companies use that internally as their
right.
instant messaging client.
Right.
And you know, when the shift to iPhone and Android started happening at corporate level, then they had to make a decision about what was going to replace this. And I think BlackBerry doesn't want that to lose that market share.
They've got to hate the fact that I mean, to talk about market share, I think it's as much about mind share. I mean, when we talk about these products now, BlackBerry is less and less part of the conversation.
Yeah.
We talk about iOS, we talk about Android, we talk about Windows Phone 7 and what HP is doing is kind of fun, but like BlackBerry just is like, oh yeah, I guess BlackBerry's still in there, but it's sort of like an afterthought.
Well, but the Android lesson is that all you need is one good product. I mean, for Android, it was 2.0 when they released Eclair and Froyo. Then that was, I mean, those were phenomenal software releases that they paired with good hardware. I mean, the Nexus One, the Droid, the HTC Incredible, all of those were fantastic phones. They're a year old now, which seems ancient in phone times. But I mean, all BlackBerry needs is one good OS release and one good piece of hardware. And they can make the hardware. We know that. They've fucked up the software over and over again. But the playbook gives me hope that maybe people there are actually paying attention to the right things and making smart decisions. And that maybe they were willing to start over from scratch and build something that's actually going to be good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I think there's a release on System 7 is November now, they're saying, right? I mean, I think
Where do you think the tablet market's going to be a year from now? I mean, I think Apple will continue to be in the number one position. But it's a lot of people are saying that they think it's going to basically follow what we've seen in the phone space, which is Android catching up and making more and more market share. And now, wasn't there a story this week that Android is actually now the number one platform
for
phones?
Yeah, but I mean it's one of those things you can spin that two ways, right? If you look at all the phones that run Android, the HTC Area and all the kind of 600 to 800 megahertz, 320 by 480, basically comparable to the iPhone 3G phones, there's definitely more Android phones than iOS devices. I think if you look at the high-end phones, the $500 – I don't want to say it because I think it's a lame term, but the super phones – you know, the higher resolution, the 800 by 540s and the
Evo type phones.
Yeah, I mean the Evo, the Galaxy S, the iPhone 4, all of the phones that are up resolution, gigahertz processors, lots of memory, lots of storage.
Yeah.
I think that it's a little bit closer between the iPhone and the Android. I mean, the thing is, I don't think Apple gives a shit because they're in the business of selling high end products. They've never participated in the race to the bottom, and they're not going to start now.
Except for $50 3GS.
That's running out inventory.
It's a subsidized product. Yeah. Though, yeah. It's yesterday's product.
Yeah. I mean, if you buy
they want to get iPhones, iOS devices in everyone's hands so they can rake in 30% of everything. Sold.
Well, yeah. If they sell you the cheap 3GS now and they know you're going to want the iPhone 5 come July.
Well, they just want to suck you in the ecosystem.
Because they've got you buying the apps. They've got your credit card number.
Right.
That's along with 200 million others.
Yeah, I've never given Facebook my credit card number, but Apple, yeah, why not? They already have it because I buy shit from them anyway. Does it unnerve you when you go to the Apple store and they swipe your credit card and they say, hey, do you want me to just email your receipt to willittested.com?
No, I think that's great.
The first time they did that, I was really weirded out. And then I was like, "Oh, that's actually kind of clever."
Yeah, because it's
I give him my Mobile Me address, and it's on my phone before I even leave the store because it pushes right through to the phone. It's
crazy. I always ask for the printout because they have to go. It's like the hidden printer underneath the table or something, or and then sort of the bags. There's a lot of secret nooks and crannies in the Apple store.
Yeah, secrets of the Apple store. It's a frightening place.
I would watch that.
I feel like a pilgrim
on the Discovery Channel,
or
National Geographic.
One last Apple thing. Yes, there might be an Apple refresh of the iPhone 4 before iPhone 5 comes out, or whatever next iPhone is.
The 64 gig model?
64 gigs and the white version might come out in April.
Where's this coming from?
Well, 64 China. Gig, there's a leaked 64 gig iPhone 4 that came out from one of the Foxconn factories in China. And I don't know why they would make a 64 gig iPhone 4 model sell it.
They did it with
the
iPhone
kind of late for
the original, with the OG.
That's the thing. And then there's also Apple Insider has a story that says that the white iPhone 4 is finally going to go in production, so they might just time it. And here's the 64 gig white model.
Do you think Do you think the 4 is going to continue to exist as the next generation 3GS?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, because the thing is, they need to keep them for people who have the 2 years of Apple Care and will drop their phone, so they're going to keep producing them,
right?
And then this will give them a way to run out those refurbs and the reduns as the next year progresses. The thing, I'm going to go ahead and say this right now. Do not buy a 64 gig iPhone 4. Don't buy from now until June. It is a bad time to buy
an
iPhone 4.
It'd be insane to buy an iPhone.
Yeah. Verizon, AT&T, whatever. Until we find out whether Verizon, we get a lot of emails about this, is why I'm saying this. Until we find out whether Verizon is going to be on the normal iPhone update cycle, which is kind of my suspicion.
I hope so. I mean, iPad 2, we see that
right
now.
They're launching day and date. until we find out whether Verizon's on the same schedule. And I mean, I wouldn't buy a new iPhone 4 because if you buy it 3 months from now, you're going to be really sad.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I guess that wraps up. Oh, iOS 4.3, anything there you were excited about, Gary?
Well, I mean, it's just nice to see that it shipped a couple of days early. It wasn't supposed to be until Friday. We got it today. I'm excited about the hotspot. I mean, that for me is the whole rationale for not needing to get a 3G iPad 2. I'll be interested to see the increased Safari performance that they are promising. Some of the AirPlay performances are great. You know, it'd be nice to be able to AirPlay video from various websites and not just, you know,
for example, Apple. tested.com.
yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to be able to put the tested videos up on my 65-inch.
We do that now at my house.
Panasonic.
I need to write this up. This is a good how-to, but basically there's a couple of Mac utilities and a couple of Windows utilities that you can just put a file URL in and it'll play it through to AirPlay.
Oh, cool.
Without having to, because I feel like it's a little weird to use your phone as the intermediary for that. Like, why would you use one of the weakest things in your house when you have a big PC and a, you know, all this other hardware floating around?
Right.
But anyway, so let's call this the end. Oh, MacBook Pros, anything exciting there for you, Sandy Bridge?
I don't really care about an I/O port. That there's nothing available to plug into it right now. I mean,
I think there's a couple of RAID arrays already.
Minor spec bump.
Yeah, for what you do, it's a very low interest. If you're a video guy,
I'm really not at this point a MacBook Pro user. I'm a MacBook Air guy now because I don't do heavy load computing. I do very basic stuff. I do writing, word processing, emails, some web browsing. MacBook Air, for me, it does all of that. And I got the base model. I got the 999, you know, 2 gig, 64 gigabyte model. And it does everything I want it to do. And even Norm is being seduced. I think he's waiting for the next revision.
I'm waiting for the Sandy Bridge one.
When the Sandy Bridge one comes out, I'm going to throw my MacBook, 13-inch MacBook, off the Golden Gate Bridge and go straight to the Apple Store.
Are you going
to
get an Air?
Yeah, I'm getting an Air.
Okay. And is that going to be – are you going to be able to do the things that you want to do? Don't you edit podcasts and stuff?
There's an iMac sitting here in this room right now that is exactly the same speed as my 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
That will become the new Will Smith podcast editing iMac.
Okay. So what would you use the MacBook Air for? Just general?
For work.
General.
I mean, I need a laptop for work.
Yeah.
The desktop that I have is one that I built home.
And I got to tell you, you get spoiled by the form factor of that thing. But, you know, my girlfriend has a 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Oh, yeah. I did the review.
She asked me to pass it to her from the coffee table the other day. And I lifted it up and I nearly dropped it. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
This thing's like a fucking suitcase.
Butterfly, Gary.
I am. I'm very limp-wristed.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened to you, man. but I mean, going from sub 3 pounds to anything that's more than 3 pounds, like it a weight that feels like it's not in your bag. Of course, Sony released the new iOS models this week, which are also sub 3 pounds. Those are Sandy Bridge, aren't they, Norm?
They are Sandy Bridge.
That's pretty exciting to me. So
I'm finally seeing some good Sandy Bridge laptops coming out.
Especially in the thin. I mean, the exciting thing about Sandy Bridge for me isn't the fact that the integrated graphics are actually any good. It's that you'll see thin and light laptops that actually have decent – that can play video and stuff like that.
When do we imagine we might see these Sandy Bridge MacBook Airs?
Rumors are May, okay. Summertime.
So not too far
springtime,
away.
Summertime. I mean, it could be a year. I mean, who knows? I wouldn't surprise me if you see those coming out. If they're really going to replace the MacBook line, the base MacBooks with MacBook Airs, which it seems likely at this point, mm-hmm. I would assume that they'll be out before school season.
If they did that,
season.
Though, they wouldn't be an entry-level Mac. I mean, I think they like the fact they have like a $1,200 Mac. Oh, no, but the 11-inch MacBook Air is only $1,000.
Yeah, so. I think what you'll see is that the current non-Sandy Bridge Core 2 will be sub $1,000, and the Sandy Bridges will take the $999 and to $1,300 price points.
Yeah, I like that.
That's my guess. GDC last week, we didn't go to any panels or anything exciting and fun like that, but we did walk the floor. I think we did that after the pod because we recorded the podcast last week on Wednesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what did we see at GDC, Norm? I don't even remember now. There's a video up on the site, of course.
You saw the Xperia Play.
Oh yeah, Xperia Play looked pretty good. I'm still bummed out that they're shipping that with a Snapdragon. That seems like a mistake to me.
Second gen Snapdragon.
But I mean, why not go big and go dual core Tegra or something like that? Think of how fun Backbreaker would be.
Contracts with. I mean, software and the ran fine. Was running Gingerbread, and I think it's going to be a decent Android phone first. But also a very capable game machine. I mean, you're playing that fighting game and it looked like a legitimate like PSP Go fighting game.
Yeah, you could play. I mean, the interesting thing about that is that I could – well, first off, everybody in the comments said, oh, man, I'm going to get one of these and put SNESoid on it and have the ultimate SNES emulator in my phone.
Yeah, I mean,
which is, I mean, that's kind of an interesting thought. I mean, I don't necessarily advocate the piracy side of that, but just being able to play SNES games on my phone with real controls would be pretty rad.
One thing that I would like to have seen there, I was out of town all that week, but I heard a lot of interesting things about this next generation graphics demo that Epic was running of what they think next generation games are going to look like.
Oh, their Unreal Warfare, Unreal Engine. They're still saying it was Unreal Engine 3, I think.
And I don't know, was it an actual engine or was it like a mock-up of what they thought would be possible?
It's real. They showed screenshots, and but it was real in-game stuff.
Okay.
So it's an iteration of Unreal Engine 3. They're still calling it Unreal Engine 3.
And I saw Battlefield 3 as well. That just blew me away. Looks amazing.
Well,
that looked like next generation.
So yeah, the Unreal Engine 3 stuff will be a real product at some point. Whether it ships on current gen consoles or next gen consoles remains to be seen. They don't talk about stuff like that generally. But I mean, Unreal has a history of showing, you know, they showed basically what ended up being the Gears of War engine 3 years before we knew what Gears of War was, or 2 years before we knew what Gears of War was, running on a gigantic PC at the time.
Yeah.
And or maybe even pre-rendered. I can't remember that year. It might have even been pre-rendered, but
it was real time. It was the Gears of War stuff before it was called Gears of War. It
right.
was the first showing of Unreal Engine 3.
Yeah, I mean, and you'll see. So you'll start to see games using this technology, I would guess, next holiday season, whatever the follow up from Epic for Gears of War 3 is.
I'm very excited for the next generation of one of the things I like about consoles is, I mean, PC games get better all the time, but it's incremental, and it's almost like watching the hands on a clock go around.
Yeah, but I mean this generation, it hasn't gotten better all the time. I mean, we've had PC gamers have mirrored the console evolution this generation, I think, with the exception of Eastern European games like Stalker and Metro 2033 and stuff like that.
But what I'm saying is, generally, for the most part, PC games get better incrementally. Whereas consoles, you know, you always see the next big step up because it happens all at once. And I think particularly in this case, you know, I'm very anxious to see that, because this generation's already been around now. Typically in a console generation, we would already be seeing
this would
at
have
least
been the
previews
year.
Of what the next console would be, if not one already out.
So Brad and I have been talking about this a lot. Brad Shoemaker from Giant Bomb and I have been talking about this a lot. This is our favorite in office at 9 o'clock in the morning when nobody else is around game to play. And the game is, what if new consoles are announced at E3 in 2010?
At 2011.
No, 2011, this year. But I really don't write any checks at all is what doing this podcast is.
I had a check come back because I put 2010 on it.
Yeah. So the place that we ended up is pretty straightforward. I mean, basically, I think if they're going to announce consoles this year for this holiday or next holiday, we'll probably start hearing about dev kits going out soon. I think for holiday 2012, 18-month dev cycle on a fast game, you're looking at dev kits being built and shipped right now. And they're probably some, you know, monster PC platform. Mm-hmm. DX11, I think we're seeing second-gen DX11 hardware out now that's pretty compelling. The performance boost from first generation to second generation is good. And I think that the big mistake Microsoft made with the first generation of console was of the 360, the last generation of the 360, is that they went with first generation DX9 hardware instead of second generation. Because if you recall, the jump from the 9700, 9800, which is essentially the same chip with some minor tweaks added, to the X series on the ATI side, which is what the second generation ATI DX9 hardware was, was substantial. You know, there was a big performance boost, and all of a sudden you were able to do a lot of crazy things. And the 360 has been kind of crippled as a result of the DX9 GPU. The other thing is, I think Sony and Nintendo are pushing DS, 3DS and GP pretty hard this holiday season. So I wouldn't expect to see any new consoles from them announced until next year at the earliest. But I wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft does a surprise at E3 and shows hints of what's to come this year, because they want to take a little wind out of the sails. And I haven't looked at the sales figures for the 360, because that ultimately, the sales figures are what's going to determine when people start shipping new consoles.
Yeah,
right?
And I think, you know, people say, oh, well, the Kinect is kind of the next generation. I think it's a nice bridge, but I think it's entirely possible that whatever the next Xbox is, the Kinect will just go over into that as well.
The Kinect's a beta test for the next generation. And if we see a next generation, we'll see something with higher fidelity that's able to, you know, I mean, already they're running a finger update for Kinect. I mean, that I've heard rumors of that coming. No games using it yet, but I mean, we'll see in the next six, 8 months things that advance on that path. And the Kinect, whatever the next generation is, I think that we'll see Kinect bundles and Move bundles or whatever they call it for the next spin on day one for that hardware. So I'm going to write up a big giant speculatory piece. I've got it like halfway done right now. But I think we're going to see new consoles. Everybody's always said 10 years. I think when they say 10 years, what they mean is 10 years as in the PS2's 10 years. You know, the PS2 launched in what, 2001?
Right.
And people are still making
games for the last couple
PS2
of years
right
of that
now.
Generation will probably be overlapped with the next one.
Yeah, of course,
one.
With the next. So anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some new consoles in 2011.
I'm very excited about that because I look at something like Battlefield 3.
Well, I mean, that looks to me like a launch title for a next generation Xbox.
Yeah,
but right? It's for this generation.
So we can look at that and infer the true next generation Battlefield will actually look even more amazing than
right.
that.
I mean, Call of Duty 3 came out on PC and Xbox One and Xbox 360, right? So I'm sorry, Call of Duty 2. If I do the math in my head, there's no reason that the PC version that's going to require a high-end badass PC isn't a launch title for whatever the next-gen console
is. It's kind of funny. I was looking at a thread online on a message board recently of like amusing – just post amusing pictures.
Yeah.
And a common one is just pictures from old issues of like Next Generation magazine where they've got these kind of bad graphics on the front and it's yes, these are real in-game graphics. Can you believe it?
Virtua Fighter
2. And you look at it going, this looks like a joke now. I mean, this would be a joke on my iPhone. I mean, how quickly our standards just go up and up so exponentially quickly.
Well, I mean, it's hard to play Xbox One games now on – you know, Gina and I went back because SSX Tricky is one of my all-time favorite games. Went back to try to fire it up and get it to play. And, of course, I don't think it even works on the backwards compatibility.
I had a similar thing. Like, I have the same thing with NBA Street 2 is one of my favorite games. Yeah. I put it in recently on the PS3, the emulator.
It's rough.
It's just like, oh, man, I can't look. I can't do it. How did we ever play these games?
Yeah. I mean, my eyes must have been much worse back then is all I could figure. So we ended up playing SSX3, which is still a really nice-looking game.
I love SSX3. That's my favorite game in that series. I'm not happy about the direction this new one's taking.
I don't feel good about the whole thing.
Super extreme.
Yeah, the extreme elements of those games were always the worst parts. The best parts were just being a badass snowboarder and having fun and doing ridiculous tricks.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're wildly off topic here, but what else has gone on this week? GDC floor, anything else? We saw the Smell-O-Vision stuff. I think we've covered that extensively at this point.
I don't think Gary's heard about it.
Gary, you were around for the original IntelliSense, right?
I don't think I know what that is.
Okay. So in 2001 or 2002, I think there was a technology demo at GDC on the show floor where Crazy comes to play called IntelliSense. IntelliSense.
As in scent. Okay.
Scent, yes. The scent of a gamer. Needless to say, that did not take off. This year, there were two competing Smell-O-Vision products. One called the Game Skunk. Possibly the most unfortunate name ever.
That's not good.
Especially given your history of skunk.
Yeah, I have bad associations.
How's Huey
with
doing, by the way? Is he smell bad?
He still smells a little bit.
Damp when
it's
he gets damp.
Yeah, when he gets damp. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's going to be around for a while.
Yeah, you might have shave him.
We bought the Nature's Miracle stuff and
did that help?
Washed him a few times. I mean, it's perfectly tolerable now, but yeah. When he comes over to say hello and you pet him, it's like, yeah.
You don't want to have a fancy dinner party with Huey over.
No.
No. The Game Skunk. And then the other one, I can't remember, it's Scent Creations or whatever. Basically, one, you stood in front of it and whiffed while they showed you a picture of what you were smelling on the monitor. And you're like, oh, yeah, that smells kind of
like
strawberries.
It looked like one of those old school like pencil sharpeners, you know, those really big ones with a hole in it. Except where you put your pencil in, that's where the smell comes out and it would shoot out air.
Yep.
Yeah.
And inside there would be, there's like 12 slots for cartridges. So they put a mixture of cartridges of different smells in their smell database.
Yeah.
And so you can put your Call of Duty smell pack and you can smell the dirt and blood.
So the thing about this is, like many other bad tech demos, it reminded me of a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing, you know, where they're – I can't remember there's so many variants of Hitchhiker's Guide, and I've consumed them all, so it's difficult for me to remember which one it is. But the one where some robot is blasting – I want to say it's the ship where the people are stuck with no lemon-scented paper napkins, but I don't think that's it. It's where they're blasted with perfume and the robots don't understand why you wouldn't want to be blasted with the pleasant scent. I had this feeling the entire demo. Like, I was like, this is the worst demo ever.
It's the least appropriate sense to be catered for during playing a game.
Right.
The only time I've ever seen smell brought into the equation in a way that worked I think you have to be completely surrounded by it. So, like, for example, I don't know if you've ever been to one of these Halloween theme parks.
Yeah.
Where they open the theme. Like, I go to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios.
Yeah.
And it's a fun thing to do. And they put in these horror mazes. So you walk through, like, the Saw maze.
Yeah.
Or you walk through the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house.
So it smells
house.
Like puppets.
And they are fully built, you know, you're inside this house. And it's a full set with live actors and you're completely surrounded. And when you walk through, say, the kitchen where they're cooking up human body parts, then there's a foul stench and it's actually almost overpowering.
Okay.
And that's all part – I mean, you know, you're actually really for real in that environment.
Yeah.
You know, you're really standing in this house and there's a live guy in a pot going, oh, I'm being cooked alive. And you can smell his flesh burning.
But if you're pumping in that – boy, that's a shitty job.
Yeah. So that's appropriate to that environment because all you're seeing and smelling and hearing everything.
Right, it's total immersion.
You can reach out and touch the gross things, and
it's like performance theater.
But
almost.
If it's done in front of a screen and they're just pumping smells at you, that's not going to work.
Yeah, Will was watching Avatar and the scene where Jake Sully gets attacked by the big monster,
the slimy panther,
the panther monster. It's like and you get the. What was it? It was very pungent.
It smelled like burning tires and like gym, like sock.
The only other thing that I think where they add that fourth dimension that works for me again at the thing, we were at Disneyland this weekend and we went to see Captain EO, which has been brought back
4D.
I haven't seen that since I was like 12.
I had never seen it.
Okay.
And because, you know, I came to the U.S. after they stopped showing it.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of an 80s thing. And now, obviously, after the death of Michael Jackson, they brought it back for a limited time. So, oh, my God, Captain EO, I've heard of it. I don't know if it's any good.
It has the puppet in the it has Muppets, right?
It has various kind of Jim Henson type, you know, creations.
Like they're the crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's Michael Jackson and there's like an elephant type creature and like a flying raccoon.
He looks
type
like an
thing.
Orangutan with an elephant nose.
Yeah. But, you know... I think you see this like in the Shrek 4D experience at Universal as well, is that occasionally they will blast you with jets of air, compressed air.
Yeah.
So you'll feel like you're traveling or...
Yeah, it's the 4D experience. Chair will move and...
Yeah, or like there's a thing where like spiders drop down in Shrek and you can almost feel them scuttling around your feet. It's like little jets of directed air.
Yeah, that's funny.
So that's fun. Yeah, but again, they have to build a specific arena for that. That kind of stuff's not going to be in the home.
Right.
And even then...
I don't want that in my home.
And even in those experiences where they've been able to build a whole arena for like Captain EO or Shrek... They don't add smell into it because I think they've realized that it's just not good.
Well, I went to a thing in Six Flags at the Power Plant in Baltimore when I was a kid, where they did the 4D theater, but the 4D was smell in this case, I think maybe the chairs had like rumblers on them, right?
All right,
and it all that room smelled like was a combination of sweat, rose, chocolate, and just like it was like it was as if you had gone down the air freshener aisle in the grocery store and blasted a little bit from each thing into a room.
Yeah,
or actually not a little bit, emptied a few cans into each room.
Yeah,
and it just smelled terrible. It was bad.
Here's the problem. I think I've identified the root cause for why this doesn't work. Is that ultimately you only ever really want to smell pleasant things. I don't mind seeing unpleasant things in a horror game.
That's true.
Or hearing unpleasant things in a scary game.
You don't want to know what zombies smell
like. But I don't
like.
Want to smell shit.
Yeah.
I don't want the unpleasant stench in my living room.
Maybe if you had like something really foul and you just are kind of impressed with yourself.
So only Willy Wonka games.
Yeah.
If there was a Willy Wonka tour.
Yes. Like,
I don't want to smell Oompa Loompa.
I want to smell strawberry and peaches and all kinds of fun stuff.
No
the chocolate
Loompa.
Fountain.
No Oompa Loompa
but,
smell.
But, you know, the problem being that is very limiting.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, most of the games that we play, like, for example, again, Dead Space, great game, deeply unpleasant in terms of the visuals and the sound. It's very immersive and scary. But I don't want the smell of rotting necromorphs in my living room. That is like that's one unpleasant sense too.
No abattoir smells.
Yes.
Yeah, so I guess that was GDC. We also did the brain scan. The video's up on the site. You should watch it. It's mildly entertaining, I think.
I thought the 3D modeling of your head was very impressive.
That
as
was
well.
Good. Yeah, that was a weird. The guy didn't explain how the technology worked, but it was firing a strobe at my head and measuring the reflections off.
But
the strobe.
I mean, it was recognizably you.
It looked like claymation me.
It wasn't. It was this guy holding the strobe light. It wasn't even a machine. That was
were you worried that you were going to get derezzed and like wake up on the game grid?
I was worried that Jeff Bridges was going to be there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was my main fear sitting down in that uncomfortable convention chair. The neuro scan thing, I think I'm going to buy one of those just to have to fuck around with just because I think that's cool and kind of neat technology. I don't know what else was going on. I mean, what else was going on? I think that was pretty much it, right? We saw some video card stuff. I saw new video cards from ATI this week.
You
tested out the 6990, right?
ATI finally released a dual-core, dual GPU single video card, the 6990, and it's fast. That's pretty much all there to say about it. It's fast, it's loud, and it's power-hungry. And it's $700. So you can buy an iPad, or you can go play, you know, Crysis on 2560 by 1600 at like 45 FPS.
So, I mean, the thing that I always – people always ask, hey, I want to build a machine for Battlefield 3. That's a bad question, right? Like if you want to build a Battlefield 3 machine, wait until you know what Battlefield 3 is going to run on.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows outside of
DICE. The unoptimized version that they were running at GDC, obviously not completed – was running on a system, I believe, with two GTX 580s.
Right. So it was a big, big machine. But it's a development build. They're going to do optimization. So even those guys don't really know. I mean, they probably have a target spec for the stripped-down, janky-ass version, but they don't know what the high-end version is going to run on. And in some cases, like with Crysis, which I think those guys probably realized was a mistake later, they designed Crysis to not run – to run on cards that hadn't been conceived yet, you know. Crysis was – we're just now seeing cards that can run Crysis at 2560 by 1600 with AA on today.
I mean, I like that those Crysis guys are out there doing what they're doing. But I had a big problem with the first Crysis, and it seems like it's a similar thing now, is that they've almost – they're almost one step too far ahead. It's like, it's great that you're doing this, but I've got a pretty high-end machine. It can't fucking run this game properly.
I'm not going to want to play it again 5 years later.
Exactly.
Well, for multiplayer, though, it's a little different story. I mean, for a Team Fortress, if Team Fortress had a crazy graphics mode – well, actually, let's not even go there. I'm never going to turn that on. I want the frame rate up.
Yeah.
I want 300 frames a second, which is crazy, I know. Crysis 2 is a little different too because it's a DX9 game. I mean, Crysis 2 should run on everything. There's no –
didn't you say that you had problems running it though, Norm?
No.
Somebody did. Somebody said something about, I wish I had a machine that would run this game.
They must have a shitty machine.
Crysis 2 runs fine as long as you have the right settings.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's only three settings.
Yeah,
my problem with Crysis 1, and I had a high-end machine at the time, was that in order for it to run the way it looked in the screenshots, it didn't run well.
No.
And by the time I jacked it down to the point where it ran the way I thought it should, it didn't look that much better than other games that are out there. There was no way to win.
The thing about Crysis 1 is I think now it's been long enough that I could go back and play that fresh. Because, you know, for a while, every time a new video card would come out, I'd go fire up Crysis and play the first few levels and be like, oh, fuck this. I'm done with this game.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, I went back to Crysis a couple of years ago and played it on a machine that was now able to dominate it. I was like, this is good now.
Yeah.
But I was like, what's the point in this game coming out now if I'm just going to have just put it on a shelf for two years and then wait and then play it?
Well, you could have gotten it for $3 if you'd waited to buy it until
– exactly. Playing cutting edge games machine. In the bargain bin. That's the way to look at it.
Exactly. So let's see what else. So 6990 is out. I mean, it seems like it's for people with giant monitors or who want to run crazy iFinity stuff, right, Norm?
Yeah, people run iFinity for sure. Otherwise, maybe not even people with giant monitors and giant budgets because they can always go Crossfire or SLI. So if you must have the best card in a single slot, or if you want to get two of these things, you have $1,500 to spend on video cards.
Two of these is a bad idea for a lot of reasons. I mean, I ran dual
– it's possible.
I ran dual 5870X2s for a little while. And it never, ever – so many games don't run right with four GPUs. It was always a pain in the ass.
The drivers are much better now. It's just that the power consumption is ridiculous.
Right. And it sounds like a jet engine.
You're talking about 800 watts just for video.
That's ridiculous. Crazy. Let's see. What else? Chrome 10 finally out. Hardware acceleration in this for real. It's stable. So if you have the main release of Chrome, just restart your browser. It'll probably be upgraded when you come back. If you want to force it – you can go to the About page in Chrome and it'll give you a button that you can hit upgrade now.
Cool. I like how they push those upgrades out.
I love that you don't get bothered like with extensions. Like the worst thing about Firefox for me now is every time I start Firefox, it's like you need to download three new extensions and there's a patch. So with Chrome, it just kind of runs in the
background. Chrome has really become my default. I mean, I took Safari off the dock entirely. I just use Chrome now.
It's the same renderer as Safari, but without all the janky ass Apple UI stuff that they do.
Yeah, I just like the tabs and just the way and the download management. I just like the way everything works.
What if
they get rid of the navigation bar?
What if they what?
Get rid of the navigation bar.
No back button. No forward button.
Oh, no text field.
You just hit Command L or something? I think that's just proto UI. I don't think they're actually going to do that.
They're thinking about doing drastic things.
That might be a bridge too far. I don't really even use the back button that much because I just swipe on the magic mouse.
Yeah. Well, the thing, I mean, think about, you remember how controversial that putting the tabs above the location bar?
That freaked me out at first, and now I'm so used to it that it freaks me out when I go back to another browser and it's the other way around.
Well, everything else feels old. Everybody else is doing that now, too, it seems like. That seems like that was a clear winner.
And it makes perfect sense that the tabs would be at the top because, like, in real files, that's where the tabs are.
Well, and the location bar is part of the contents of that window for all intents and purposes.
Oh, and also the other thing I do is when I try to type a search into the address bar.
Yeah.
And it goes, and another browser goes, well, what are you doing? This isn't a URL, but Chrome, of course, completely recognizes that.
That's the thing I love about
Chrome. I really don't like missing, like, the only reason I go back to Firefox occasionally is I do like having a separate search bar from the location bar.
Why?
The search I use for spell check sometimes, like, it's a very quick spell check.
But you can do that in the, I mean, the one thing I don't like is the instant load. I'm not a huge fan of that. Where it loads the page while you're still typing the URL or the search query or whatever.
I'm okay with that. It only does that if you're actually on the Google search page.
No. It does that. Well, you can flip it on, so it'll do that for everything. So if you start writing TES and you go to test it a lot, it'll preload test
it. I never really go to the Google page anymore. If I need to do a search, I just type it right into the URL field of whatever page I'm already on.
Well, right. And frequently if I want to search a site, I just do site colon name of the site and then type the search. I don't even use the site search anymore.
Sometimes I hate that. I'd rather use like the Google search. Like if I want to use Google search to search with
when it tries to use the internal search.
I don't like that.
Well, and since our internal search is only a pop-up and doesn't have a results page, then that breaks every time, which is kind of a bummer. We should probably look at fixing that. I'll talk to Dave about that because they're doing some small fixes this week. Let's see. The ViewSonic ViewPad 10. This is, I think, the dumbest product I've ever seen. It is a dual booting Windows 7 / Android 1.6 tablet. Thoughts, guys?
Well, it does. One thing that we didn't talk about in the tablet conversation at the top of the podcast.
Yeah.
Was where is Microsoft in all this? So they're now saying that they're not going to have a product in the market until the end of next year. I mean, aren't they?
Have they actually said that?
I think there was something that came out. Somebody, I think Ballmer may have said something, you know, off the record or whatever. But I mean, the fact is they don't have anything that we even know about. I mean, isn't this kind of shocking that they seem to be being left behind, not just by Apple, but now by Motorola and these Android platforms and, you know, BlackBerry and everything that's going on.
So from a strictly business standpoint, I think it makes a lot of sense to focus on phones. Phones are ultimately a probably bigger market, even though tablets will continue. I mean, first off, there's always the chance that tablets will turn out to not, you know, not carry through, right? That people will buy the first generation of tablets and be like, okay, I'm good. Not ever buy a second.
But it's not like Microsoft is a company with finite resources. I mean, they don't have to focus on anything. They can't. Like, they can and should have. A very aggressive, you know, tablet research division right now.
I think that they do. I'd be stunned if they don't have tablet research going and haven't for the last year and a half. The thing I would say is that I think that they're in a place now where they realize it's smarter to wait to announce something and then overship and underpromise and overdeliver rather than start building up hype 2 years before, a year before a product's going to be ready. And then release something that underwhelms everyone.
Isn't the worry, though, that if you wait too long, that as we've seen now with phones, that the market is now kind of calcified?
Yeah.
And Windows Phone 7, even though it's a great product, came in so late that it's going to be hard for it to make a dent because everyone's already invested in iOS or Android.
I don't think that's a big problem. And the other thing is I think that the tablet – I think once they get the phone stuff really solid, then that immediately – that informs the tablet stuff directly. And they're still, for whatever reason, pushing Windows 8 as a full tablet. I mean, running a full OS on the tablets, which I think is a – I mean, I think everybody thinks that's a bad idea except for Microsoft.
What I would like to believe is that – at some point soon, we'll see some kind of Windows Phone 7 Froyo. No, Honeycomb. Like a Honeycomb.
You mean
Honeycomb
Windows Phone 7. I think that's the thought.
Because this whole business of like just trying to put Windows 7 itself onto a tablet in some kind of cut-down form, that to me is the old thinking.
Yeah.
And they need to get with the new thinking, which is Honeycomb, iOS.
It's better to scale the phone OS up than scale the desktop OS.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I think everybody agrees with that. I think Microsoft is going to have to release some terrible Windows full Windows based tablets before they get to that place too.
Right.
I mean, I think that they don't. I think you know, if you think about it from Microsoft's standpoint, the worst thing they could do is cannibalize the PC market. without significantly growing market share.
But the thing is, it's getting cannibalized, and they can either reap the rewards of that or just watch while other people eat their lunch.
I think there's no proof of that yet, but I think that's the direction that
it's
going.
There's no proof that PC sales aren't down. The iPad has eaten into laptop sales.
It seems that people are
buying. I feel like I see that story every week.
Laptops, they're eating into netbook sales, but Microsoft doesn't give a fuck about netbooks. They don't make any money on – I mean, they're selling the cheapest possible version of Windows into netbooks, and it's a bad experience. It's a market that they're fine with losing. That is a market that Microsoft is 100% okay with going away.
The thing is, as these tablets become more and more powerful, they're going to eat into more and more powerful sectors of the laptop market.
That is the definite concern. But I think there's a fairly significant amount of time before that happens.
All right. It just seems that Microsoft is behind the curve of everything else that's going on right now.
That is the story of Microsoft in the whatever decade we're in.
Post-Gates era.
Yeah, the Ballmer era of Microsoft.
Yeah, pretty much.
Always under the gun. Well, except for Xbox. Xbox is nice.
Xbox is great, but it came out of the Gates era.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Kinect, we have good news for Microsoft on the Kinect front. They've sold 10 million units with an attach rate of one game
at least
per
one.
Unit. Yeah.
10 million sensors, one game
sold
per unit.
10 million sensors
right.
of Kinect. It's been out for, 4 months?
Since November.
That's
November
very 8th. Impressive. And please
months?
Tell me that the one game attached is not the one
it's
that ships
not
with
the one
not
that
Kinect
ships.
Adventures. Yeah. No, I mean, okay. I think that means everybody has
So people
two
actually
Kinect
went out
games.
And bought like Dance Central or Kinect Sports or whatever.
I think
they're saying it's the fastest selling consumer electronics device.
I got to be honest, mine has not seen a lot of use.
We fire up Dance Central maybe when people come over.
Yeah.
And frequently not even then because it's not that good as a party. It's not like Rock Band where you have 4 or 5 people playing and everybody's having
right.
a good time. It's
right.
like one person making a fool of themselves and then
well,
it's
that's,
fun. It's
that,
fun.
That's fun.
That's fun
I mean,
for everybody
it's
else.
It's karaoke basically.
Yeah. It's dancing karaoke.
Yeah.
So I mean I think in order for that stuff to really take off, and my hope would be that either in an update coming down the road for this generation or in next generation, it will be able to make sense of a full room full of people. So instead of just like Dance Central only working with one person, you can have 2 or 3, 4 people dancing and everybody's getting judged.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I think that makes it a much more fun game.
Right.
The testament to their marketing.
Yeah. I mean, they push that incredibly hard. And well, and I mean, this is another – the music genre lesson is that parents are willing to spend money on games that don't involve shooting other people in the face.
Yep.
And yes, and which moving. Involve your kids getting active.
Yeah.
It's all positive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for a while when Rock Band was a new thing, we would bring the guitars and the microphone and the drums over to people's house. And invariably, as people who have like teenage kids, friends of ours that have teenage kids, invariably at the end of that conversation, somebody would be like, how much does it cost to get all this? I'm going to just show me what to buy and I will order it right now. And, because it's good. They like seeing the kids playing games that aren't Call of Duty or Halo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which I can totally get behind. I think that's good. And Kinect feeds into that. So, I mean, I think we'll see. I think that's going to inform the next generation of consoles a lot.
And how is Move doing?
I don't think Sony's released any numbers beyond the initial that they shipped for 4 million units into the channel.
Right.
But it's difficult to say. Like, the Kinect is easy to judge moving units because, there's like one thing you buy. With the Move, you need two components at least,
parts,
maybe three.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's confusing. I think they sold 4 million of those bundles, though, was the
right.
last thing I heard. I don't know. That's a giant bomb story, really. So the last thing I have on the news front this week is I was browsing the App Store this morning on my iPad, as I sometimes do in the mornings. And I noticed an app that I was surprised to see in both the top of the list for best-selling and top grossing.
Oh, yeah. I saw you tweet about this.
Yeah. So it was a fingerprint security device.
Right.
Which is, as I know all tested listeners know, something that the iPad and the iPhone do not have. These are functionalities that these devices don't.
Like software cannot make it do that.
Software cannot make it do that. The screen doesn't have enough resolution to actually read fingerprints. There's no camera. There's no fingerprint sensor. It is something that does not work.
So you bought it?
I bought it.
And?
It does nothing. It flashes a bunch of screens. It says access granted. And based on how you wiggle your finger while it's on the touchscreen, it unlocks the app.
In the spiel, in the documentation, are they open about the fact that it's just a gag like these lie detector
that
products?
That is the bad thing.
Okay.
So in the spiel, I'm going to actually open it up right now and read it. So I brought the iPad in here specifically for this. I'm going to keep talking while App Store loads very slowly. And the app is – so I've actually requested – okay, so here's the app. Fingerprint Security 2011 HD It's made by the same Joker that makes All Phone Tracer, which is that thing that you put in a phone number. I thought it was a phone number collection scam. You put in a phone number and then it flashes a map and it uses your current location from the GPS to show the phone number's current location, assuming that you're going to show, hey, Gary, what's your phone number? I want to show you where you are on the map, right?
Okay.
It's like a bullshit. It's another thing that doesn't do anything.
Right.
What this says is, it's been changed. Now it says for entertainment use only, and it does not provide true finger scanning functionality.
Yes, because
it did Apple not will, say that this
they're
morning.
They're going to get pulled from the App Store if they don't, no doubt. Apple will eventually. The question is, they're supposed to have pretty good scrutiny of this, right? How does it even get?
I mean, that's the thing place? Is, why is this even in the store? It says.
That seems like that's one that slipped through the net there.
Okay,
that sounds more like an Android.
He's changed the description since I bitched about this on Twitter, or maybe not as a result, but since 9 o'clock this morning, the description has been changed again. I took a screenshot. I'm going to get that.
They've been getting
right
some, been getting some grief from people, no doubt.
Well, it's fucking bullshit, man. I mean, and the thing is, you have, it's just a ripoff. It's 99 cents. Here's what it says: description on sale for very limited time, 50% off full price. Buy now before the price goes up. This is the pro version of the internationally successful fingerprint scan security protector. Blah 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 blah. Most impressive and realistic fingerprint security app in App Store. A real protector of your iPad. Simply put finger on scanner. The application can scan and verify your finger, then grant the iPad owner or deny other people to use the device. More info is on the usage page, blah, blah, blah. It works guaranteed 100%.
Now, let me tell you why that's particularly bad.
The guaranteed 100% or the it works?
Well, all of it.
Okay, so just to be clear, now at the top it says for entertainment use only, does not provide true finger scanning functionality. And on the bottom, it doesn't say it works guaranteed 100%.
So that's a recent change.
This has changed since I tweeted okay. that at 10 o'clock this morning.
Now,
this morning.
You know, ultimately you have your own, you know, you're responsible for your own computer
buyer
security.
Beware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I imagine it's possible that somebody could read that, assume that because Apple curates all the apps.
My dad would read that and think it's okay.
And then, you know, as a result, just leave their iPad lying around going, oh, well, I've got my fingerprint scanner on it. And then someone comes on and reads all their shit.
It's not even that. It's the fucking fleecing of for 99 cents that they're making enough money that this was the number four top grossing app this morning when I looked at that.
So what do you
store.
Think happened there? Do you think somebody wised up?
Well, I sent an email to my PR people at Apple and said, hey, can I get a comment on this? This seems a little skeezy.
Oh, so maybe
why are you guys
are
allowing
reason?
This?
The question is, the people at Apple must know that this technology cannot do what it claims to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's
so how
the
does
thing
it even get through?
Why does it get through the App Store? And if it does get through the App Store, why is this guy not banned if he's changing the description so it looks like it does something it doesn't?
This guy's a fraud.
It's well, clearly. I mean, but he's been a fraud for a long time because these apps have been around for a long time. It's the same dude.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think they need to pull this guy's license, don't you think?
I mean, that's the thing is, if this isn't against the terms of service, but having a Google Voice app was for a year,
yeah.
Then why the fuck isn't it against the terms of service?
Yeah, because this is blatant fraud.
It's a scam.
Yeah, it is a scam.
What I saw this morning, the only way to know that this wasn't something that would actually do what it says is that little top left column where it says which category, instead of saying utilities or tools, it says entertainment.
Mm.
It's a load of shit.
Maybe that's how he got around it. But the point is that even though it's put in that section, the copy is blatant lies.
Yeah. Full of lies. And nowhere in the copy that was on this morning did it say. Now, here's the thing. Is it a good – should Apple have to verify all the copy that goes into the App Store? Absolutely not. But if they're not going to allow you to verify that, then there should be a report button on the App Store that allows users to say, hey, I don't trust – this seems fishy to me.
Isn't
can you
one?
Guys check it out? No.
There's no button to complain
not on
about
the iPad
app.
Version. No, there's developer page, tell a friend, gift this app, app support. App support in this case goes to apple.com.
Okay.
No. And you can leave a review, of course. But this app has – hold on. This is the
what's,
other one.
What's the – What's the user feedback? Because usually that kind of pleases itself. I see a lot of apps.
The user feedback is very clear.
I see 100 people going, this is a scam, and that's enough to put me off.
Right. The user feedback on this one is...
I saw it had like 55 star reviews when I looked at it earlier today, though.
Yeah, this one... Hold on. I'm getting down to the reviews. This one has 80 ratings, 53 are positive, and he's killed all the reviews, so you can't actually see them.
Ha!
I'm going to look at all versions. So you must have uploaded a new version. The first one is fake. The second one is fake. The third one is just okay, kind of clever, but the info button gives away the secret. That person's retarded. This one is good for a laugh, not smooth or accurate, but it will fool your friends into thinking you do have a fingerprint scanner. That's clearly a fake review.
Right.
Read this for real. scammers, fake crap, total scam, waste of money. Why, if they're curating this experience, it infuriates me that this is there.
See, my point is that once the that's the shape that the reviews are starting to take, I would, if I'm Apple,
they should have a flag.
I would pull that out.
Yeah, and the app should be pulled. I mean, I think like, they should refund money to the people who bought
why
this.
Why not just have a system that searches the reviews, and once you see like 50 or 25 occurrences of the word scam or 50 like one-star reviews, then put that in front of one of my app police guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is a person should look at it, and if it's a fraudulent app, then they should remove it from the store and refund people's money and take the money back from that person.
I agree. That's outrageous.
My rage meter is full, Gary Whitta. But my happy meter is also full.
Hey, by the way, can I just say I'm so pleased because I was looking at the app market myself just now.
Yeah.
That Angry Birds is no longer number one.
Yeah.
Oh.
Go Tiny Wings.
Go Pig. Yeah, Tiny Wings, by the way, big, big money. That
very,
is a
very
good,
popular.
Good
so
app.
This is the new Angry Birds.
I don't know about that. I don't think Tiny Birds has the wings to carry it as long as Angry Birds did.
I don't know. It's number one right now, and I see a lot of people tweeting and talking about it.
Well, when Tycho posted it on Monday, I was like, oh, Tycho, he's usually pretty good on this shit. So I went and downloaded it, and I was like, okay, that's an hour. I've lost an hour right now. What's your high score?
I haven't played. My girlfriend's been playing. I haven't played very much.
Norm Chan, high score. Have you got no Tiny Wings yet?
Nope.
Oh, God. We got to do apps of the week right now to get this out of my system. I like Tiny Wings a lot. I got to Island 7.
And I'm excited to see Fruit Ninja is still hanging in there. So that's such a great game. People should be talking about Fruit Ninja, not Angry Birds.
I don't like Fruit Ninja.
Oh, it's so much fun.
No.
You don't like slashing fruit and going,
I do love fruit and I do love ninjas, but I do not, I just don't think, I don't think there's much game there is my problem with Fruit Ninja. You know, on the Atrix I've been testing, there's a Tegra optimized HD version of Fruit Ninja. So I downloaded them both, put them side by side. I can't tell the difference. Seems like a little bit of a ripoff there. Anyway, yesterday was the 1 year anniversary of Tested's launch.
Wow. You went back and looked at some of your first stuff, didn't you?
I did. I went back and read the first couple of things we wrote.
And what was the very first article you put up?
Well, the first thing's the manifesto.
Okay.
You got to do that, right?
Do you feel that you have honored that manifesto?
I feel like we did a pretty good job. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the one thing we have whiffed on is the wiki. We don't have a wiki yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out that is a pretty substantial – it's a little bit harder than we thought it was going to be. And rather than do something half-assed, we want to do it right. So we're taking our time. But it's coming. We're still working on it. It's been a hell of a year. The manifesto is, I mean, when you launch a new tech site, when there's 50 million tech sites out there, I feel like you kind of have to say, here's why we're launching a new tech site.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing that I liked especially was, well, there's two things. One is Norm had written, the first thing I think Norm wrote was 10 stories you're never going to see on Tested, which I think might be one of like five lists we've done in the last year. And
right.
I mean, I don't know how much people pay attention, but for most tech sites, lists are bread and butter.
That would have been so awesome if the first article was, here's 10 things you're never going to see on Tested. Number one, we don't do lists ever. That would have been awesome.
Well, it's kind of the stuff that Norm did was like stories about Twitter, because, I mean, that's tech, right? That's Mashable bullshit. I don't need that here. Stories about pink iPhone cases. No pink iPhone cases. I think we did a couple iPad cases, but only the ones that were actually good, not the 50 million shit ones.
Yeah, I mean, that's what iPod Lounge is for.
Yeah, exactly. A bunch of other stuff is good. You should go back and read it. It's on the last page of the news. The other one that I really liked was I wrote this thing called What is Tested and Why I'm Super Excited About It. And basically I said in that I feel like, and I hate to toot my own horn, but I'm going to do it because this was good. I basically said, look, we're moving into a period of time where technology is advancing at a pace. Benchmarks matter less and less every single day. And it's much – as we move forward further, computing is going to become more about how the experience of using these products is than whether your CPU is 10% faster than your last CPU.
Right.
And, you know, then Steve Jobs obviously read that too and copied me last week during the iPad 2 launch keynote. I mean, I'm just saying it's the only way he could have figured that out.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah.
You should be getting a percentage of the iPad sold.
Why not? Well, that would be a little crooked. But anyway, a year of Tested. We talked about favorite videos on the forums. There's a good thread there. A bunch of links back to funny shit that we've done or interesting or informative, but mostly funny and goofy, including such great, fantastic. If you're new to the site and you missed some of the early videos, like you should definitely check out the condom versus waterproof cameras. The very first video we shot.
I remember that.
We really had no idea what we were doing. It was really scripted. And looking back on it kind of makes me cringe, but as it should.
Yeah.
But
when,
Norm,
when you guys first told me that you were defecting and going to go set up this new site and it was going to be all videos, I thought it was going to be some fucked up Charlie Sheen type situation. But it was, you know, it didn't occur to me that there would be professional production values and it would all look good.
I don't know. Well, thanks, Gary.
Yeah, I never assumed that you could do anything decent.
I thank you.
And yet you confounded my expectations.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd call we have professional, but it's more professional than what Norm and I could do on our own.
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, check that out. The thread is at the top of the forums. I stickied it the other day. It's really good. And I guess that's it for news this week. We've talked a lot for what
you know.
I
a lot of people are complaining about that that new Twitter for iOS where it throws topics right at the top of the screen. A lot of people want that gone.
I haven't been using iPhone for the last several weeks. I've been on the Atrix, so I haven't actually had firsthand experience with that. But I think that that's lame.
A lot of people complaining about it. I don't like it, and it has potential for spoilers too.
Well, it's the kind of thing that I would happily pay $2 or $3 or whatever. Like pay for a pro version that doesn't have their ads. You know why they're doing it.
Well, it's not even ads. It's trending tweets, but some of them are promoted tweets.
Yeah, I mean that's how they're getting ads out there to the mobile market.
Right.
So I mean I understand Twitter's need to make money. I think Twitter making money is a good thing for everybody who likes Twitter.
They do need to make money because Twitter is great, and right now they're not really making money.
Well, they made good money last year. I mean
make a profit?
I have no idea. We don't cover Twitter per Norm's 10 things you're never gonna hear about Untested. But no, I mean, I understand as somebody who runs a significantly smaller, orders of magnitude smaller site, I mean, there's always the pressure between, you know, making money somehow with ads and having the ads not be so intrusive that they annoy everybody to the point they stop using your service. They've got to figure out a better solution for it. That bar, I loaded up the iPhone this morning. It is fucking annoying.
It's obnoxious.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, there's like 50 million Twitter clients in the App Store. So just go pay $3 bucks and buy something better. I mean,
although I still think, aside from that, it's the best Twitter app.
It is my favorite Twitter app by a pretty wide margin.
I know a lot of people like Echophone and Osfura and some of these other wacky ones.
TwitterPad's good, not TwitterPad. Twitterlater is pretty good. Yeah, TweetDeck's good, but I don't like TweetDeck on the iPhone actually. But if you, I mean, the nice thing is you can go out and get one of those other apps and you won't suffer for it.
Mm-hmm.
If they do that to the iPad version, I'm going to be so sad because the iPad. Like the iPad Twitter client is my favorite. Twitter.
I think the iPad version's next.
I'm sure. Probably Android's next, actually, and then iPad. But anyway, I think they're going to continue to be backlash. They updated last night with a super buggy version of the Twitter client that makes it a little less noticeable, I understand. I haven't actually
looked at
that yet.
They've added some other features that we've wanted for a while. Like, you know, if you start putting in a hashtag, it'll autocomplete for you and things that it should have had a long time ago.
But it still doesn't do – it doesn't auto shrink URLs anymore.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, it does? Oh, I had trouble with that the other day on the iPad. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, yeah, I mean I don't know. I feel like there's plenty of Twitter clients in the world. If somebody,
many, many, many.
Yeah. If they fuck that one up, somebody else will make something that's better.
Right.
I guess that does it for news this week. Let me play the interstitial music and we'll talk about what we tested. Norman.
Mm-hmm.
You have a giant ass. Are you playing Tiny Wings right
Possibly.
Now? I see
Norman's
your thumb.
Just been in another world this whole podcast.
He's sick. I'm glad he's here.
Are you still under the weather?
Yep. He's not healthy.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Why am I in this sealed room with you guys just for a long period? Yeah, thanks a lot. Maybe I should be using this as like a shield.
We had masks. You could have put a mask on.
If I'd have known, I would have. Thanks for telling me that you're sick like 2 hours after.
Yeah, I would have brought Sard's guard.
The Sard's guard. Two hour sweat box cast brought to you by the common cold.
Wonderful.
Rhinovirus. Norm, what are you testing this week? That TDK boombox thing went up this morning, right?
Oh, yes. We got the TDK crazy three-speaker boombox speaker system iPod dock that uses 12 D-cell batteries.
12?
Wow.
And it looks ridiculous. It's an amazing, crazy design. And it sounds pretty good, but is pretty impractical for $500.
Yeah. I think pretty impractical is the kindest thing you can say about that. It sounds okay.
It sounds fine. I think it's decent speakers. As a speaker system, it's fine.
I thought it was kind of cool that you could plug an instrument into it.
Yeah, it also works as a practice amp.
What else have you been testing? You're still working on the Zoom reviews coming up next week, probably?
We're probably going to shoot that next week. And then we have a system build also coming up next week.
Oh, interesting. Do tell. So Jeff wanted a new computer. We helped him spec out something that's about $1,500. I always think $1,500. I mean, that's what we did. Yours was about $1,500 last year, right, Gary?
What was?
Your PC build?
Yeah.
Right around there?
Came in around $1,500.
I feel like that's a pretty sweet – that's pretty much the sweet spot for building. You know, you get a good CPU, plan on sticking with the CPU, motherboard, and RAM for a long time, and then maybe upgrading the video card a year, year and a half in, and get 2, 3, 4 years out of that PC, maybe with some hard drive upgrades and stuff like that over time. So we're doing that on Tuesday, and we'll do that live, but we'll post it on the site later if you miss it. What else?
It's our annual PC build, and also it's when we refresh our test bed for benchmarking.
Exactly. I shot my Atrix review yesterday, so that'll go up, I think, late this week, early next week, probably, if I had to guess. The short version is that the phone is really awesome. I like the phone a lot. I wish they hadn't put Moto Blur on it, but, I mean, as an Android phone, it's really good. The one thing, the extra stuff, the web top, entertainment center, useless, completely valueless as products. Don't buy that for that netbook thing.
I still don't.
It's too expensive.
I still don't get it.
We can set it up. I'll show it to you.
I just don't get it. The fundamental concept of this thing that docks with your computer.
So basically the fundamental concept is that you put the phone into a dock, or you use the hack that lets you plug in just an HDMI, mini HDMI cable.
Do I need to buy a Motorola computer that has that dock? Or is it
No. It's just like a USB dock.
Okay.
It's like the iPad dock. It's just a thing that you plug into other
Because the
things.
One they show on the TV ads makes it look like the dock is part of the computer.
Well, they have a laptop.
Yeah. So
right, that's what I'm saying. I didn't know if you had to have that computer as well.
So there's two things. One is that you can just plug the dock that's just like a cradle into a TV or monitor with HDMI. And then plug a USB keyboard mouse into that thing and then use that as the web top, right?
Okay.
Then at that point, basically the CPU in the phone, the dual core CPU in the phone, becomes the CPU for this special version of Ubuntu that runs basically just a copy of Firefox.
Right.
It's very, very slow. Very, very, very slow.
Mm.
They also have another accessory that is basically a laptop with the same dock connector. You jack the phone into there, and then the laptop suddenly becomes your computer.
It's not a real laptop. It's just a shell of a laptop that has no processor, no memory.
It's just a keyboard,
just
a screen, a touchpad, and some battery.
Right.
There's extra battery in there.
Right.
And you get the same laptop on the screen of the laptop.
It basically allows you
there.
To use your phone with a bigger screen and a full keyboard.
Well, no. It uses a WebTop OS. So WebTop OS is like a stripped-down version of Linux. That has – so it's basically running like Ubuntu, a special version of Ubuntu with desktop Firefox on it.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, I understand what you're saying to me, but I don't.
You see my lips moving, but you can't hear me talk.
No, I understand it, but I don't get the
why
you would want that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is it's for people who are carrying a netbook and a phone in theory. In practice, though, the performance is so abysmally bad that you're never ever going to use it. And that laptop thing is $500.
Jesus Christ.
So you're better off buying a $250 netbook and the phone and just saying fuck all the accessories.
Right.
Tethering the netbook to the phone and going from there. But the phone is quite nice. The dual core phone, I mean, it performs well. It's really fast, especially when you ditch Moto Blur and use ADW or Launcher Pro or something like that. The screen's not so hot, not super keen on the screen. They added you can remove most of the AT&T crapware. So I was able to uninstall the Nav app and the Redline app and all the stuff that AT&T packs on there. Need for Speed Shift. You don't actually need, it's pretty good. I mean, it's fine. It's relatively easy to root, but it's not like a super easy.
The docking side of it.
Yeah,
aside,
just forget all that shit.
How does it stack up against the other Android phones?
Well, it's one of the first dual core phones. I think the LG phone is out in some markets now that also has the Tegra dual core. The performance is really good. It's running Froyo, which is a little bit of a disappointment. I wish that they'd put Gingerbread on it, but I think that they're committed to upgrading to 2.4 it seems like nobody's – I wasn't able to find a citation for that, but there's like 50 million forum posts where somebody says, dude at MWC said, hey, we're going to put 2.4 on this.
This is what would drive me crazy about Android, I think, is that there are so – because there are so many different streams of it through different – so many different hardware manufacturers and so many different versions of Android that are always being upgraded. And again, sometimes they're on this phone but not on that. At least with the iPhone, I know that it's going to be good for a year.
Yeah, you have one solid year.
There may be an iOS update, but I'll get that right away.
Yeah.
And then I know that I've got 12 months until I have to worry about being upgraded.
Yeah, I mean, whereas
with Android, I can bring home the HTC shit stomper or whatever the latest one is that came out this week.
Oh, the shit stomper.
Is that
the one with the OLED screen or is it an IPS?
Yeah, it's an AMOLED screen, which allows it to stomp the shit.
Okay.
And then I come home and I go, yay, shit stomper. Turn on the TV. Oh, new from Motorola, the turd blanger. And I'm like, oh no, it's somebody instantly has a better phone.
Yeah.
Like we joke about that's the Apple thing that you do, right?
Yeah.
But at least with the iPhone, that's like you've got a solid year. Whereas there are so many different manufacturers and things. There's a new Android phone. There's a new king of the hill every 5 minutes.
Well, that's what competition brings you. It's the difference between PC and Mac.
I know. It's great to stand back and looking at that. Hey, look, the market's always moving forward. But like, I would be terrified to buy a phone.
Well, I think as the market gets more mature, it's going to be less of a problem because there's less and less of a difference between Android updates every update now, right?
Right.
Like, once the Dalvik JIT compiler came into Froyo and performance got good, like from Froyo to Gingerbread is a relatively small and for the most part cosmetic jump, right? From Gingerbread to Ice Cream, I think we'll see, I think we'll see that the difference between a high-end brand new Android phone and a high-end 6-month-old Android phone is going to decrease, especially, the thing that's happening now is this is an inflection point because the change from single core to dual core is pretty substantial performance-wise. And that helps smooth out a lot of the janky, the hitchiness of Android that always bugs me. I wish they hadn't put Moto Blur on it, frankly. I mean, it's not bloatware. It's their custom UI, which in Motorola's case is basically some widgets and a reskinned launcher app.
That shit.
Well, the widgets are actually pretty good. I mean, the widgets that they install are like, I don't have the phone in here, but basically you panel over one screen and you have the ability to turn off Wi-Fi and GPS and all that stuff kind of individually if you need to manage power.
Okay.
It's important on this phone because you actually do need to manage power a little bit.
Right.
Like if you just use it normally, it'll last all day, no problem. But if you're using anytime I use Nav or anytime I use the mobile hotspot, basically I have to recharge it midway through the day.
Howard Stern was talking about he got an Android phone recently and he was disappointed with the battery life. And then somebody, I guess, had pointed out, oh, you need to get this battery management app.
Yeah.
And when he started using that, the battery life got better.
Somebody probably told him to use a Task Killer, which is not a good idea at this point in time. But I feel like battery management is something that you should not have to do on a phone.
I agree.
That's something the phone OS should just take care
of. Right,
off.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It was fine with Android 1.0 and 1.x versions that you had to do that because, I mean, those were very clearly early adopter products. When you're looking at something that people are selling in the mass market for normal consumers, you shouldn't have to fuck around with that.
Mm.
Of course, the other thing is if you install a bunch of apps that run shit in the background, then you're always going to have battery problems on Android.
Right,
so,
right.
I don't know. The Atrix is the best Android phone on AT&T right now by a pretty substantial margin because the only other 1 gigahertz plus phone is the Galaxy S version, the Captivate, which is, as everybody who has read or watched my review knows, is a flaming pile of shit and to be avoided.
I remember it well.
Yeah, so – I've also been testing some coffee stuff. We'll shoot that next week and it'll go up soon.
Cool.
But I did the Hario V60 dripper last week, which was, it's the kind of honey, what's a hive. Looks like a honey beehive.
Okay.
And it's for delicate pour overs and stuff like that. It's kind of neat. I've been having fun with that.
All right.
So yeah, let's, you want to take some questions?
Why not?
Let's do some.
So Always Be Clothing, who is, I think, he's got to be really high up on the Tested Superfan list.
I see him a lot on the forums.
Yeah. Well, he did an awesome how to send an audio question guide in, basically explaining his whole process for sending audio questions. And you can find it in the This Is Only a Test forum on tested.com/forums. So just go there, read that. If you have a question, email it to podcast@tested.com. Keep it short. That's all I'm going to say. I usually give a whole bunch of instructions. His post is awesome. Just read the post. And here's the first question.
Hey, Will and Norm.
Oh,
this
wow.
is Chris from Chicago.
Bad clipping.
little hometown trivia. The world's first skyscraper was built in Chicago in 1885. Now, time for my question. I'm in the market for a new monitor for the PC, and I was looking at the 27-inch cinema displays by Apple and was wondering if that would work for my PC. Essentially, I would like to use a monitor, but it also has the built-in webcam and speakers, and wondering if I can get all of those to work together. Thanks for answering the question, and love the podcast.
Okay, this is a good question. The 24-inch cinema, the cinema displays with the display port connectors and also have USB ports. The challenge with getting them to work typically is that the drivers for that stuff are only available as part of the bootcamp drivers that come with OS X. So you can definitely, if you have a video card that has DisplayPort out, so any, I guess, Radeon 5 series or newer probably, and I don't think the NVIDIA cards have DisplayPort out, do they? So yeah, so you have to have an ATI card. You need to get an adapter for Monoprice, but that'll be like $5 to go from DisplayPort to mini DisplayPort. And you won't have access to brightness controls. But I think the sound out will work, and the camera will also work.
They are beautiful displays. I mean, I have basically that panel on my 27-inch iMac, and I do have a little bit of experience with this because I do run my gaming PC through that iMac.
Oh, you've switched to doing that.
I use target display mode.
Okay,
it's very easy. You press like Option F2, and it just looks for whatever's plugged into the external mini display port. And it was a hassle at first. I think it wasn't until they updated the drivers there was an issue with the particular. I have the 5870 ATI. Uh-huh. The 5800 series just didn't work with that panel.
Yeah.
And then at some point they updated the drivers and now it does.
Okay.
Now I have sound running externally and I don't use the webcam when I'm gaming, so I don't know if you can make any. I imagine you can do it. But yeah, I suspect it's more of a hassle than it would be if you just went out and bought like a comparable Dell.
Well, but
monitor.
The thing is, Dells don't typically have the speakers built into the panel in that inconspicuous way. They're bad speakers.
Speakers are kind of crap. You should put external speakers on it anyway.
Well, but the thing is,
especially if you want to play games,
I see the appeal for that because I use headphones when I play games.
Right.
So
then don't worry.
Sometimes it would be nice to have a set of speakers just if I want to listen to music and I don't care if it sounds good.
I know, but honestly, like
they're really that bad.
Like it sounds okay. Yeah. Until you plug real speakers in, like pull the jack in and out on the back so you can see, and it'll instantly kind of feed whatever's in there. So it will go from internal speakers to the, you know, whatever.
So do you change the USB port too? Do you move from your Mac to your – oh, no.
I don't need it because the monitor doesn't –
Got it.
I don't need it to drive anything. I don't need to access the camera or the speakers or anything else.
Got it.
So, I mean, I imagine I could, but I just use it as a panel, and the sound is going to a separate set of speakers, and it looks – incredible.
It's a nice IPS panel. I mean, the thing is, you won't be able to adjust brightness in Windows, which is a bummer. You may not ever notice that you need to do that, but basically none of the on-screen control stuff will be able to work. If you want a comparable monitor that doesn't have the Apple encumbrance and that will work with something other than the Radeon 5800 series and newer,
yeah,
you can go get it. Dell sells IPS panels, and they're relatively inexpensive and really nice.
As much as it's not in my DNA to advise the guy against buying an Apple product, I would say it's not worth the additional hassle. I think you can probably buy other, you know, regular Dell or Gateway, you know, whatever monitors that are, if not as beautiful, are probably as good and ultimately not going to be the. I don't think the Apple monitor is worth the hassle. You've got to get the mini DisplayPort adapter.
Yeah.
You're gonna have issues with drivers. Like, just get a regular PC monitor.
Yeah, agreed.
And also, just in general, I would say if you're going to buy a monitor of that size, once you get up into the 27, 30 inch, especially if you're gonna be playing games, make sure that your PC is powerful enough to be running games at that resolution, 25x60x1440, which is the native res of that display. Is no joke.
You need a $500 video card.
Yeah, because basically. Just saying, oh well, I'll just run it at a lower res, it won't look good.
Yeah, you're better off getting a resolution that you can actually run.
Yeah.
Podcast. This is Stephen coming from Tullamore, County Offaly in Ireland. My question today is about cars. We've seen a lot of introduction in the last few years of energy saving cars and fuel efficient cars, such as the electric car and the hybrid and the hydrogen fuel cell cars. When the first hydrogen fuel cell cars came out, everyone was like, oh my god, it's the future, it's no harm to the environment and it only wastes water, oh my god, this is the future, oh my god. But it kind of petered out over the last few years, and there's been no development in that way of making cars. And the electric car is kind of just not much point to it because it gets its power from fossil fuel burning electricity stations. So my question for you is, where do you see cars in the next 100, 200 years or the future anyways? Like, are we all going to be flying around on hoverboards or is it going to be like Futurama style, just flying through pipes in the air? Just, I don't know, what do you think will happen? Like, we can't run on petrol and diesel forever, gasoline, whatever you call it, across the pond. That's my...
I cut him off.
There's another minute
left on that question.
I got it. I got the point.
I want robot controlled cars. You saw the demos of the Google self-driving car?
Yeah.
At TED?
Yeah.
I don't want to own a car. I just want to pay like a couple $100 a month to drive collective cars.
You want that Minority Report car. Right?
I want the future. Yeah.
I loved that idea of it, that car that goes up, that slides up and down buildings and like deposits you right into your apartment. That's fantastic.
I want Michelle Moynihan to look at me and be like, what, you drive your own car? You're crazy.
Yeah.
Because I want to just hit the button and be like, home.
Do you think within our lifetime we'll be there where cars are just completely self-driving?
Norm just said 10 years.
You think 10 years?
I think if Google has cars that can drive right now, 10 years probably. 100 years, I don't think we're going to have cars. I think overpopulation and we'll be out of fossil fuels.
I still think there's too much instinct and reaction and judgment required for computers. I don't think computers are
really there
yet.
I mean, think about it. The car is barely a little bit more than 100 years old, right? 120, 130 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So... I think Norm's probably right that probably we won't have cars 100 years from now, or that the car will be unrecognizable transit from today.
Obviously we're going to need to get around. I don't think we're ever going to be doing like matter transportation.
No, that's crazy.
But
unless we discover infinite power,
I think transport, be it public or private, is going to be increasingly automated.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is dangerously near fake outtakes. Maybe we should table this and come back to it in a little bit.
But to go back to the initial question, I mean, I don't know where we are with hydrogen fuel cell, but an electric car, he's right. Ultimately, the energy is still coming from fossil fuels, but I think it is still more efficient than just burning gas.
So the rationale on pure electric cars is that even if you're getting energy from a coal plant, which is fundamentally dirty, the output of the coal plant is cleaner or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And the cost per mile for fossil fuel burns compared to an internal combustion engine is significantly lower.
Yeah.
And it also distributes the pollution out of the already badly air polluted urban areas and outside of that, right, that part of the world.
So. And we're seeing the Leaf being the first mass produced electric car.
I don't think we're ready. We don't have the infrastructure for full electric cars right now.
No, not yet.
If you buy a Leaf and it has 80 or 100 mile range or whatever it is,
yeah, you bet.
You have to be able to plug in wherever you're going.
It's only a matter of time before we see the first stories of people getting stranded.
Right. I mean, well, it comes with roadside assistance to come and recharge your ass when
because it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
And I mean, like, if I had that car, it would be a constant source of stress for me about where the fuck is my next plug-in? Like, right.
And that's not like where's the nearest gas station.
No.
You know there's always one close by. There's always a gas station close
by. Even in like San Francisco, it's hard to find gas stations sometimes.
What's the closest you've ever been to like actually worrying you're going to run out of gas? Like actually like to like the car will just stall in the road. Have you ever really been there?
Seinfeld thing?
How far past E have you? I never did it deliberately because that is crazy. But I did one time look at my gas meter and realize that I completely just kind of blanked on it, and I was like deep into the red. Well, like I have a digital thing that says how many miles left. It was down to 1 mile.
I've hit,
and I was panicking.
2 miles.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was panicking
when I was in college. I had a manual transmission Ford Ranger, and one time I literally popped the clutch in and rolled down a hill and was thinking about what gas stations I could get to on the momentum from the hill.
Yeah, well, that's pretty close.
I mean, it didn't sputter and die, but
yeah.
I mean, it was one of those situations where I had, you know, I didn't have any money at that moment.
Coasting into a gas station on fumes.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think we'll see. I think electric is eventually going to take off. I'd love to see slot cars. I wish we lived in a world where you got into every car and it was a slot car. So you're driving down the freeway, thing jams down, you charge while you're driving down the freeway.
And that's how you get the automated transport. And again, the Minority Report model is similar to that. Like, they don't have slots, but I think it's like they have like magnetic rails or something, mm-hmm, where the cars
are guide wire or something.
The cars are. I remember they had this thing when I was a kid We used to have, you know, the electric. It was called Scale Extric. You know, the electric racing cars.
Yeah,
and
slot cars.
You pull the trigger. Yeah, slot cars. Then they brought one out called TCR, Total Control Racing.
No slots?
No slots. It was done with magnets. And so the cars could switch lanes.
Oh, I remember that.
Anywhere.
I remember
that. It was the shit.
You know what? I feel like slot cars – slots for me, like when you were a kid and you went to somebody's house and they had slot cars,
yeah.
That was a fucking good day.
Oh, yeah. Slot right? cars were great.
Right. I mean, it was
never any good at them though. Like, I never – the concept – I still have this in racing games today.
Full gas
yeah, the
or
concept
nothing.
Of like turning – like why is my car always like shooting right off yeah. at the corners? Because I have no concept of like I should probably slow down here.
Yeah, the slot I like the slot cars. I think we should do some slot car tests. I think that'd be fun.
I wonder what the state – you've got to believe that by now, 30 years later since I've played slot cars
– I hope they're using superconductors.
Well, I like to think that the technology now is pretty fucking – the slot cars right. These days are pretty fucking good.
Right. Like if like you have to wear safety goggles because if it flies off in the track and hits you in the eye, you're going to not just lose an eye.
I mean even when I was a kid, they had ones that had fake smoke that came out the back. Yeah. And
That I don't want that. I want speed. I want as fast. I want – the fastest thing imaginable in a slot car.
So much fun.
Yeah.
But then like the way that the pieces were slot together, the little tabs would always break off and
– well, they were very shitty.
Yeah. Now, though, they've got to be good. You should go out and buy a state-of-the-art slot racing kit.
I mean, it can't be more than $100, right?
Yeah, for a good one.
Why would we not have that? We'd be fools not
it's
to.
It's just fun to have.
Yeah, exactly. We could gamble. We could just do a TNT that's slot car racing.
I think people would go for that.
Just nothing but $5 on the table.
I'm surprised they haven't done that at the Omegathon yet.
Yeah.
It seems like that would be
the perfect Omegathon.
They did a claw
thing.
Machine,
don't,
right?
I know you're tight with those guys. Don't tell them. Don't give them this idea.
Just give them a $1 million idea.
Right. Don't. You know, I'll be watching. Got a couple more questions.
What's up, Tested Crew? This is Jay from East Hampton, Massachusetts. Interesting fact about East Hampton is our water is so clean and crisp that they were going to put a Budweiser bottling plant in our town a long time ago. The town turned it down, and now every big business that was running out of a factory is shut down. So now we're an artist town. Ugh. But I have a question about podcasting, and I've heard you guys and many other people record Skype recordings directly into a podcast. I do one of my own, getwastedpodcast.com, and I would like to know how this is done. I kind of taught myself audio editing. Because I wanted to do a podcast after listening to so many. So I kind of, you know, I use Audacity, which is, it's free. But I was wondering how this is possible. I have an idea in my head that it's going to involve two computers, but I'm still not quite sure how it goes down. Quick explanation would be awesome. Love your podcast. GetWastedPodcast.com. Thank you.
Nice plug. I might go back and bleep that. That would be kind of
weird. Yeah, he slotted in there so artfully. I think you should bleep it just to troll him.
Right. I'll bleep the first one, but not the second one. How's that? So the way we do Skype recordings is we plug a second computer into the mixer. So basically that second computer runs Skype. Line out on that computer goes into an input on the mixer, and line in on that input goes to an output from the mixer, a monitoring output from the mixer. The trick we have found is that it is very important that you don't feed back the channel that the Skype out is coming into the mixer on. Think about that for a sec. So you don't feed the what the person on Skype is saying back out to that channel on Skype on the mixer, or else then they'll get horrible echo and it just loops and loops and loops, and then all of a sudden they hear a bad noise. So what you have to do is have a mixer that will let you bring it all the way down. If you want to get really fancy, what you can also do is have the person who's on Skype record what they're saying into their microphone using Audacity or GarageBand, Audacity on the PC or GarageBand on the Mac, and then they can send you that file. And if you have them clap or something early on, then you can sync up what you see in Skype with what they hear. And it will sound almost as if they're sitting in the room. But if you have a good internet connection on both ends, for all intents and purposes, Skype sounds pretty good.
That's what I love about Skype in general. It's so much better than having people call in. The call quality is much more like them being right there with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we have people call into the live shows, you can always tell the difference between a Skype call.
Oh, yeah. I remember hearing that. People on the phone sound like people on the phone. And then suddenly this guy's like, wow, is he there?
Yeah.
And it's the magic of Skype.
Yeah, it's fantastic. One more question, gentlemen. Then fake outtakes.
Hey, Will, Norm, Gary, Anna, whoever else is there. My name's Paul from North Andover, Massachusetts. And my MacBook Pro's battery, 15-inch, is at a point where it's only lasting about 50 minutes off the charger. So I was wondering, do you guys think I'm better off trying to find a cheaper aftermarket battery or going with the official Apple battery for $130? Thanks. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Oh, yeah. Bit of trivia. My hometown, North Andover, Massachusetts, is also the hometown of Gears of War designer Cliff Bleszinski.
So I'm guessing he has an older generation MacBook that actually does have a replaceable battery.
Well, you can replace the batteries in the newer generation one, too. You just have to take it
apart.
MacBook
or MacBook Air?
He said a 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah. If
I would just swap it out. It's pretty easy to do.
Is it?
Even on
the unibody ones?
Yeah, you just unscrew it. The bottom. You unscrew the bottom. You might have to move the motherboard out of the way. I can't remember. The thing I would do is look and see what your exact model is. Go to iFixit, and they have really good guides for that kind of repair. And then, I mean, you'll be able to look at the pictures and see if it's something you want to embark upon.
But what is the – I mean, it's good to do it yourself so you don't have to be without a MacBook for however many days.
Right.
But to his question, what is the deal on official batteries versus batteries?
I mean, really? If as long as you buy it from – I wouldn't buy it from some dude standing outside the Apple store with a bunch of batteries in his coat.
Yeah.
But as long as you buy it from someplace reputable that sells
he's
Mac
got
repair
boxes
parts.
Of strawberries on one side and batteries on the other.
Yeah, I got a Romex watch. I got 50 pints of strawberries and I got a MacBook Pro 15-inch battery. Oh, it's too big for your MacBook. Give me the scissors. I'll
cut
it down.
Some guy in Times Square with like photocopied movie scripts.
Romex?
And Romex watches, yeah.
You want a Romex?
You want a Sorny? Magnet box.
I love that Sorny TV. That's good stuff right there. Yeah.
So if you can get a deal on a battery, go for it.
Look and do the research to find out if some of the replacements are going to be harder than others, depending on which MacBook he has. I know that there are some that you have to take the whole motherboard out in order to get to the battery.
Mm.
I would pay Apple to do that one, frankly. If you can just pop up in the bottom, pop the battery out, put a new one in, do it. You're not going to hurt anything.
Yeah.
So I guess that does it for questions today. As always, if you have a question, podcast@tested.com. Or check tested.com/forums and go to the This Is Only a Test forum. Read Always Be Clothing's excellent How to Ask a Question Properly guide. That dude at the beginning who was wildly clipped out could have benefited from ABC's guide. And I guess that wraps it up for this episode of This Is Only a Test. For Norman Chan, Gary Witta, thanks for coming back, Gary. It's good to see you. Oh, hey, you got to plug something.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
While you were gone.
While I was gone, well, I mean, this was before I left, but certainly, you know.
Well, while you were off, while you were away from This Is Only a Test, I guess.
So I'm going to plug Robo Charity, which is an effort to raise money for a worthy cause in Detroit. They're called Forgotten Harvest.
Yep.
And what they do is they go around and they rescue surplus food, like food that would otherwise be thrown away by, you know, from food growers and restaurants in various places. And they ensure that that gets distributed to emergency food providers, like people who run soup kitchens and you know, drop-in centers and, you know, places.
So it's not like a canned food.
It's not
drive
like, no, it's
situation.
All fresh food. It's like fresh potatoes and produce and all this kind of
cool.
stuff. And they, you know, there's a lot of people in Detroit that don't have enough to eat, and they ensure that, that the food that would otherwise be thrown away. So it's kind of a 2-for-1 deal. They prevent food from being wasted, and they also make sure that it goes to the right people. And this kind of came out of the RoboCop statue. You know, people were talking about they spent $50,000.
Yeah, it was a Twitter Kickstarter thing.
Yeah,
right?
They spent $50,000 building a statue of RoboCop, and myself and a couple of other people said, well, you know, maybe there are other causes that could use money as well in Detroit. And we started up this thing, RoboCharity. You know, you can go to ForgottenHarvest.org and donate money to a worthy cause. And this week we even got Peter Weller, the original RoboCop.
The only RoboCop, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, the 1987 original model.
Yeah.
The Paul Verhoeven, the guy who played Alex Murphy stroke RoboCop in the movie, was kind enough to record a little message for us endorsing RoboCharity.
So how is that whole thing working out? Like, does he have to have upgrades and stuff done occasionally? Or like, does he still wear the same helmet? Does he get a new helmet at some point?
I think he's now fully removed. I think they found a way to fully remove him from the suit.
Oh.
And he's fully human again.
Oh.
Not as cool.
No,
I thought that was a documentary for a long time.
No, he's.
What about that guy? What about the guy who got shot in the boardroom? I mean, is there a charity for him?
Well, I mean,
we're making light of a serious thing now. I apologize for that.
I mean, he was fine again in Total Recall 3 years later. So
oh, okay.
I don't think it was.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, he seemed to have recovered as well.
It worked out okay.
But
maybe not a documentary. Perhaps
you can go to youtube.com/forgottenharvest and see the video that Peter recorded for us. And you can go to Forgotten Harvest's website, or you know, dial the number that Peter gives you on the screen, and you can donate money to a worthy cause. And
awesome.
Help feed hungry people.
Well, and the thing that's good about Forgotten Harvest is their overhead is crazy low. So I think it's like $1 feeds 3 or 4 people or something like that.
5 people. Every dollar that you donate feeds 5 people.
So since
it provides 5 meals. So for example, right now I think we're up to about $8,000 that
awesome.
The charity received through the Robo charity donations, and that feeds 40,000 people.
And then that's because they're not actually going out and buying food. They're just – you're paying for gas to go pick up food that Safeway is going to throw out.
So basically
they have
a fleet of trucks that go around to places that they have an arrangement with.
Yeah.
And they'll pick up, you know, sacks of potatoes and bags of vegetables and things that would – you know, fresh meat that's going to go bad like the next day or whatever. And they make sure that food, rather than being, you know, thrown into recycling or whatever, gets eaten.
I think that's awesome. Yeah, I put in my $50. I
appreciate
hope
that.
You guys will chuck in a little bit of money
too. Do the same. And 600,000 people in Detroit don't have enough to eat. It's outrageous that happens in America.
It's
we're here talking about iPads and stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, people give us a lot of shit because we are conspicuous consumers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this seems like a great cause, and I read about the charity after you started tweeting about it. I mean, I'm picky about who I give money to.
It's really great what they do, because I always feel like sometimes I'll go to Trader Joe's or whatever and buy some chicken fillets or whatever, and then like 2 weeks later I didn't get to eat them. Like,
you mean fillets?
Fillets, whatever. I'll buy some fresh meat. And then, oh, that looks good. I'll eat this marinated skirt steak thing.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later I just
it's in the bottom of the trash can.
And then I throw. And I just sort of I never feel more guilty than when throwing away food that I just let go bad.
Yeah.
But this is what they prevent from happening. They go to these places and they get this food in bulk. And then give it to the people that put it in the mouths of people that need it.
So check the YouTube channel.
So that's my plug. Go to youtube.com/forgottenharvest just go to forgottenharvest.org, and you can donate money right there on the website.
And it does. I mean, yeah, spirit of giving.
Yeah,
very good. So I'm going to play the music, and then we'll do some fake outtakes.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
That's it.
I like being a ninja, and this game is for me because it's called Fruit Ninja.
See? Like he said.
Topical.
That's it.
I don't know if we have time for fake outtakes.
Really? Have we used up all our
time? We've been going for a long time.
We can't not have fake outtakes.
But people kind of expect it.
Should we talk about the bacteria thing, the bacteria from space that turned out to not really like be an overexcited
guy? It wasn't live. Wait,
Is
it actually life?
No, it was evidence of life.
So it was from meteorites, and they found fossils.
This is the same thing happened in, 2001 or something?
I'm not sure what it was, but I don't know what the results were, but the announcement was that they had found fossils of life forms that were very similar to, you know,
filament-shaped structures and freshly fractured slices of several meteorites.
Right, that could have been fossils.
They resembled the remains of cyanobacteria.
Yes.
This was kind of cool. I was checking my iPhone and I discovered this story while I was in line for Space Mountain at Disneyland.
Oh,
so I was like, wow.
Space.
Maybe I could travel into space.
Yeah.
From Space Mountain.
No. Doesn't work.
Meet some space bacteria.
discover space bacteria.
You know, I don't like Space Mountain. I'm going to go ahead and tell you why. It's because you have to straddle somebody. Like,
no,
sometimes
don't.
That's
no,
okay.
You don't
straddle somebody in Space Mountain?
Splash Mountain.
Oh, Splash Mountain.
Yeah.
Space Mountain, it's two tandem.
It's dark.
But you have a
– No, wait. It's either Splash Mountain or the Matterhorn bobsled.
Matterhorn,
where you have to –
Matterhorn, two people per – yes. Matterhorn, yeah. It's
– So there's uncomfortable groin touching.
I sit in the actual seat and then someone's like straddling me behind.
Yeah.
Which is never good.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Okay,
let's talk
about
Disneyland.
Well, it's nice for couples.
No. I mean, it's good to have your special
lady
friend.
Let's talk about something. You know, we do the science thing. Let's talk about something different.
I just want to say, not peer-reviewed, this article this guy published.
No.
It's in a journal that's –
He sent it out to – 1,000 different peers. It was supposed to be
It is not peer reviewed. It's in the Journal of Cosmology, which is not a peer reviewed journal. And that journal is issued a press release that it is going out of business in May.
Oh. All right. So has it been discredited?
The thing that people always say in this situation is that extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. I don't feel like there's been extraordinary proof given in this instance.
Okay.
So anyway, that is a huge disappointment.
Because I think by now, if it had it been like properly validated, we'd be hearing a lot more about it rather than just now it was a one-day story.
Well, we've done this before. NASA did this with a meteorite that they found in Antarctica, and they were like, oh, we found evidence of life on Mars.
Well, that's where they got that footage, if you remember, in Contact.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton is going, this is amazing. And
it's like 1996.
They took that footage from that discovery.
Yeah, that was the best part of Contact.
Yeah.
Man, the producers of Los Angeles must be disappointed.
Apart from the fact that the lighting was really bad, because he gave that speech out like in the Rose Garden,
yeah,
and it was daylight,
yeah,
and they made it look like it was in the press room,
yeah,
and the lighting was all off. Yeah, like sunlight on his face in the middle of the room.
Anyway, not necessarily a hoax, but probably a dude that jumped the gun. Maybe he got a little too excited.
Bummer.
So let's see. Do you want to talk about Disneyland?
Do you enjoy theme parks?
I haven't been to a theme park. When my inner child died in 2001, I stopped going to theme parks.
But don't you Will's find inner that, child is in the Christmas tree farm?
Don't you find though that when you walk through the gates of Disneyland and you see the sign that says "Here you leave"?
I've never been to Disneyland.
Oh my god!
Well, okay, Disney World. There's the same sign that says "Here you leave
the Magic
today
Kingdom.
And enter the world of yesterday, tomorrow, and fantasy."
Yeah.
Don't you find that your inner child is resurrected?
I like Disney World. I went to Disney World. I didn't actually get to go in the theme park because we didn't have time, but we were there because we went on a Disney cruise for Gina's job probably 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I like Disney World. I don't like being around that many children.
Are we going to get one of these like hard luck childhood stories from Will again where like for him a theme park was his dad like had him chase rats around the backyard with a shovel? And
he was there to scam some other kids.
Dad got a jar of honey and a spoon and said, well, we're going to go to Disney World today, Will. No, dude. We went to Disney World when I was a kid. I like Disney World. I'm down with the whole thing.
You don't make an effort to go to theme parks as an adult.
The theme parks around here kind of suck. Like, I don't think I would travel specifically to go to the theme park.
Okay, Great America does kind of suck.
Yeah, and the one over in the East Bay is shitty too.
You know what I love is water parks. But I'm kind of fat, and I feel self conscious just in my swimming shorts, and everyone around me is like half my age and, you know, much better looking and thin, and I'm like, I just feel like kind of a sad sack.
Here's the thing.
Don't give a fuck.
Is if I ever have a bunch of kids, like I feel like at my age, it's a little creepy to just be a dude at a water park.
No, or in a water park, yes.
Yeah.
I'm talking Disneyland.
Music park's okay. Inner child. I went to a friend of mine got married in 2003. We went to MGM, Universal, and Epcot, I think, when we were there.
Universal's fun.
We might even go to Disney World too. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. But
we were at Disneyland this weekend, and I think we go a couple of times a year now, and it's always so much fun.
You're a man definitely in touch with your inner child.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I like Disney. I've never been to Disneyland, but I like Disney World a lot.
I think if you've been to Disney World, you've seen everything Disneyland has to offer.
Except for the Matterhorn. No Matterhorn at Disney World.
Yeah, you're not really missing that much. I mean, it's very
similar.
Matterhorn is not that different to like Big Thunder Mountain Railroad
Big Thunder Mountain is fun. But Matterhorn is like, it's thrilling.
Matterhorn's dangerous because I think that's the thing that's killed more people than anybody except for the SkyTrains. SkyTrains killed a lot of people.
I like Splash Mountain.
I've never been to Splash
Mountain.
That's
the longest line, I think, Splash Mountain, especially in the summer.
No, Space Mountain's the longest line.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, the trick on Space Mountain, this is only a test exclusive. The secret to Disney, you know. Do you know this?
Go on.
Do they do fireworks at Disney at Disneyland?
Are you going to say go while the fireworks are on?
Dude, if you go while the fireworks are on.
Tried that, didn't work. 70-minute line at Space Mountain in the middle of the fireworks, dude.
Oh, fuck.
Doesn't work.
You got to go to Disney World.
Well, it didn't help that Splash Mountain and Star Tours were both closed that day. So there was a lot more people going on the other rides.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones, that's like an 90-minute wait. Forget about it.
What? No way. Do you use the pass?
You got to use the fast pass.
Well, yeah, you can do that, but it's not like I prefer, like when we go to Universal Studios, I will pay for the VIP pass that just lets you go to the front of the line.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's the best money you can spend. Otherwise, you spend all day standing in lines.
Yeah, fuck standing in
lines.
But
Disney only has the thing that says, take this ticket and come back at an allotted time.
But if you plan it
out, you
only
have one at a time.
There's an iPhone app, I guarantee you, that optimizes you do the
fast passes. It's called Rides.
Right.
And it tells you, from your app, you can see what the current wait time is in all the rides.
Right.
And it will tell you what the fast pass situation is.
Right.
It's useful.
Can you pick up the fast pass on your phone without having to actually walk over to the ride?
I don't think you can do that.
That'd be crazy.
That would be great. No, you've got to show up at the machine and like get your ticket.
See, I think in Disney World, the fast pass works better because the rides are frequently higher capacity.
Yeah.
So like you will get – the other thing that I really loved as a kid was Epcot because I was a science nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And Epcot, like back in the day, was – a combination tribute to science and American industrialism.
And that is only at Disney World.
That's only at Disney World. It's the giant golf
ball
thing.
The Interventions thing in Tomorrowland, but it's not as good.
So like in the day, you would go to Disney World, to Epcot, and like go in the Living Sea, right?
Yeah.
The Living Sea was this thing where you walked into an elevator that looked like SeaQuest, right?
Right.
You hit the button, columns of water go down, it gets darker, you see some sharks and shit swimming by.
Yeah.
In reality, you're probably dropping like 15 feet, but they do it real slow and with really hard movements at the beginning and end, so it feels like you were accelerating at incredible speed.
The Finding Nemo submarine ride is similar to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you get down and you're in an undersea base.
Right.
Okay. So at that point, like you walk through, I think you get on these little carts.
Oh, and the people movers. Okay.
Well, some of it you're walking. Like once you get to the bottom of the elevator, then I can't remember if you walk through the tunnel or you ride carts through the tunnel. But basically, you're underneath this enormous aquarium, and there's all sorts of sharks and shit swimming around.
Yeah.
Divers everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you go out and like you're in like a control center. It looks like something from Star Trek, kind of.
Yeah.
Where like there's a giant open aquarium, and there's guys on aqualungs diving in the center there, and they're feeding turtles and dolphins, and everybody's frolicking, and there's sharks, and it was very cool.
My favorite.
And then you ride the elevator back up. Like they don't. Yeah, there's no suspension of disbelief.
You feel like you've been on it. It's like that Star Trek ride they used to have at
in Vegas,
where you feel like you've been beamed aboard the Enterprise.
Yeah. Right. Because like if Six Flags did that, they'd get like 2/3 of the way there.
Right.
And then it'd be like, oh shit, we're out of money for the elevator ride back up. Yeah. Just put an exit here.
You got to make it.
Nobody's going to notice.
Make it seamless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that they did that stuck with me. Well, there's two things. One was a World of Tomorrow exhibit that was sponsored by GE or Ford or GM or some faceless multinational.
Yeah.
Where you got in these people movers and you rode through the history of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with like, you know, man banging sticks against rocks.
Right.
And goes up to like Industrial Revolution, Iron Age, Bronze Age, all that stuff.
Right.
And then you get to like the 50s era and it's, you know, housewife in the room. And there's little movies and like life-size dioramas on this whole thing.
World's Fair type stuff?
Like World's Fair shit, exactly. Yeah. And then you get to the World of Tomorrow, and it was like – this was in 1987, 88.
Yeah.
And it could have been ripped straight from like a Life magazine in 1963, like flying cars and the whole fucking nine yards. It was awesome.
Right.
And then there's like a – there was a gun aspect of that one too, where you'd be in these little sideways riding people movers shooting at stuff.
Yeah.
But the very best one of all was brought to you by the fine folks at either Shell or Exxon. Can't remember which. This was an auditorium-sized hovercraft where you got in, you sat down, and literally it looks like it's like a movie theater. You think you're in a movie theater. You sit down. All of a sudden it goes and you lift up, and what seems like a theater splits open, and there's like life-size animatronic dinosaurs in there.
Wow.
Brought to you by the oil company.
Wow.
Which is awesome and also kind of terrible, but
that's
awesome.
Pretty cool. The other thing they have at Disney World, which I wish they had at Disneyland, because it's one of the classic things I always wanted to see, is the Hall of Presidents.
Oh, yeah.
The robots.
They don't have that at Disneyland,
well,
really?
Well, they have a thing called
Hall of Vice Presidents?
No.
Hall of Secretaries of State?
Joe Biden. Or something. No, they have this thing called like Great
– Dan Quayle.
Like the history with Mr. Lincoln. They have like an Abraham
Lincoln.
Fuck
that. The Hall of Presidents is awesome.
It's not as good.
Do they have a Haunted Mansion at Disneyland?
They do.
Haunted Mansion is the big money.
They have Jungle Cruise. They have Haunted Mansion. They have Pirates.
Tom Sawyer's Adventure?
All the main ones.
Do they have the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse?
No, it's Tarzan.
No, they have a Tarzan treehouse. And they also
fuck
had
that retconning,
they
man.
Had Captain EO, which I had never seen before, but was obviously since the death of Michael Jackson, I guess they decided to bring it back.
Didn't we talk about this already?
Yeah, but not on the podcast.
Yeah.
Internet gold.
Really? Was it before the podcast?
Before the podcast.
Seems like so long ago.
We discussed it briefly.
Okay. It was EO, and then they changed it to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
It's in the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids theater.
But you thank that because of the advancements they brought for the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. They've incorporated that back into EO. And yes, and so the EO that you see now –
You get
4D
better.
Stuff that you did not get with before.
That's true.
See, at Disney World, Captain EO was part of Epcot. It was right next to the hydroponics lab, which I always thought was kind of funny.
Well, Captain EO is awesome. It's actually one of my favorite things there.
Yeah,
my favorite thing overall at Disneyland is Jedi Training Academy. That is shit.
Man. I've never seen that at Disney World.
I just wish they would let grown-ups do it. It's wasted on these fucking kids.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
You know, they pick these little kids out of the audience and they give them plastic lightsabers and these guys dressed up as Jedis, you know, player. Yes, well done, Padawan. And,
right.
And then right as they get into
obviously
the training,
someone deleted the planet from the archives.
Yes, exactly. And yeah. then Darth Vader shows up, like a full-scale, full-size
like
Darth
Like a really
Vader.
Tall guy?
Yeah.
Like the fucking stage 7 foot tall, up.
Yeah, the whole stage lifts up and there's smoke coming out.
And stormtroopers run through
stormtroopers
the
show up yep. and Darth Maul and Darth Vader comes out and goes, you young Padawans will come to the dark side and like the Jedi Master is like,
and then he kills them all if they don't?
Well, so here's the thing. If I could do any job, I've decided that since I can never be one of these little kids, they won't let the grown-ups do it.
You want to be the Vader.
No matter how much I push other kids out of the way and go, me, I never get picked.
Right.
I feel that my only chance, and this is I've now decided it's my number one job in the world. I would give up my current job to go do this, go be a Jedi instructor at Disneyland, a Jedi training academy.
Okay.
Because I would fuck with the kids so badly.
Wow.
I want to do the thing when you're selecting the kids. I would like go up to like a kid that's like slightly overweight and go,
not enough midichlorians.
You're too fat to be a Jedi.
Oh.
Fucked for life.
That is powerfully wrong,
that
dude.
That kid never recovers. The other thing I would
so,
do.
So mean.
The other thing I would do.
What? You're wearing a Mickey Mouse shirt, man. What unleashed the dark side in you, man?
Here's what I would do. I would have one.
Jesus Christ. I don't know if I can continue this conversation. I am flummoxed.
Feel the power of the dark side. I would have one kid that's actually, you know, it's like a child actor that's with us. Yes. But he's in the crowd with all the other kids.
A plant is, well, I think, the word for that in the grift industry.
He's a plant. And so what they – because what they do is once they have the kids come up one at a time to fight.
I've never seen
Vader,
a joyful look of glee in your eyes like I'm seeing right now. I'm a little scared.
So I would set it up so that the first kid that comes up to fight Darth Vader is always the plant kid.
Okay.
And, you know, what happens at Jedi Training Academy is like Darth Vader goes through like a pre-sequence of like very kind of lame moves and the kid
right,
gets
duck.
Like, they
right,
back,
swing.
Yeah, duck, swing, hit him on the head. And like, yeah. you do a couple of moves and then Vader like walks away and the next kid comes up. But it's very lame.
Do you think Vader wears a cup?
I think he does.
Yeah,
I
mean, some kid's going to walk up and kick him in the balls. Yeah.
Someone's going to do it. But I would have the first kid come up.
I would tell my kid to do that.
I would have the plant kid come up, and as part of a choreographed fight, just have Vader just kick the shit out of this kid. Just beat him.
Like force push him across the room into a ball.
Beat him down, like whack him really fucking hard with the lightsaber. And all the time he's going, you're not a man. You're not a man. And then like have the kid
crawl away.
The kid pulled away by the stormtroopers. His lifeless body just gets dragged away.
Powerfully fucked up.
And then you say to the first real kid, right, next.
So much bitterness.
Jedi, it would be sadistic Jedi Training Academy.
So when I went to MGM, they had the same kind of thing, like a stage show, but it was Indiana Jones, and they pulled people out of the audience to play.
Oh, I never saw that.
Nazis and
oh, that's kind of cool.
Like basically extras, right?
Yeah.
And one dude got to play Indiana Jones.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. Yeah.
Never saw that.
He had a whip and the hat and the jacket, the whole nine
yards.
Did
you ever see the Terminator 2 3D show at Universal?
No.
Where they have live actors and performances? It's actually really cool.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you. Go ahead.
Is that still there?
Yeah.
I'm probably going to go
It's
summer.
A lot of fun. They do a whole thing where like a live actress comes out and she's looking at a business suit. She says, welcome to Cyberdyne Systems and we're going to demonstrate to you.
Oh, so it's like the video game.
This is the one that was shot by James Cameron.
Yeah, it was all James Cameron. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was at the time it was the most expensive film ever shot minute for minute.
Yeah, yeah.
After EO.
I believe so because obviously it did come after EO. It was right after Terminator 2. And so there's a live performance aspect where they take you into this big auditorium. It's meant to be like a Cyberdyne business presentation for the shareholders, for the investors that you are playing.
Okay.
And they show you this video.
Do you have to wear a suit?
No.
Okay.
They're in suits.
Oh, okay.
But they show you this video that's kind of like that AT&T ad, like imagine a world where 10 years from now, a robot will tuck your child into bed remotely.
Yes.
But the arms are like, you recognize them as like the T-100 arms, so you know it's kind of fucked up.
Oh, shit.
And then in the middle of the presentation, these like Sarah Connor type characters like blast in. They go, we have come from the future and this has to be stopped.
Are they naked?
No, they're in like fucking – why would you
think
that?
I thought when
that?
You get sent from the future, you're always naked.
They showed up yesterday.
Like, so they've already stolen clothes from somebody.
They're not beaming in from the future immediately.
Oh.
They have arrived yesterday. And
so you have to like –
they went to Urban Outfitters first and then came here.
Okay.
And so they've got like their cool revolutionary clothing on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they say, you must be stopped. Cyberdyne's going to fuck up the planet.
Okay.
Skynet, blah, blah, blah. And – then a Terminator-type actor shows up. It's just a big dude in glasses and a leather jacket. It looks a bit like Arnie from like 100 feet away where you're sitting.
But he's not a metal robot.
No.
Oh.
He's in his human form. And then it somehow integrates into a 3D movie presentation where it's Edward Furlong and Arnold, real Arnold, driving around through the post-apocalyptic Skynet world.
Ooh.
Like a 15-minute movie.
This was before Terminator Revolutions too,
Terminator 3.
Terminator 4.
Pre-Terminator 3 and 4.
Salvation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, he fights the T-1 million,
that
which is a crazy 3D metal, liquid
not canon,
metal thing
not canon.
That comes out into – no, it is canon because it's Cameron. And it comes out into the audience. And it's actually the best 3D I've ever seen.
Okay.
It's really good. Like this thing is all this multi-pronged octopus type T-1000 character that comes out over the audience like, whoa, it's really 3D. It's things are coming right at us. It's awesome. And it's really clever how they have like characters will, you know, the movie Arnold will run up to a certain point in the screen and then the live actor Arnold will come out of the screen at that same point. So it kind of blurs the line between what's filmed and what's
just,
live performance.
You know, this actually sounds a lot like what they did with that Voyager ride. Did you ever go to the Vegas Star Trek experience when they added the Voyager thing?
Yes, but I never saw the Voyager part.
Yeah, there was a Voyager one after they did the TNG one.
Oh.
And I'm sorry you missed it.
I'd like to have seen that. I'm so sad that's gone now.
That one, you started off, you were visiting the Doctor. This is after Voyager's back on Earth.
Robert Picardo.
And you're at a medical research facility, and you're a test subject because you want to find out who has resistance to Borg nanites.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then – so you're in – it's like one of these like interactive experiences where you're standing around in like – you're in a starbase.
Yeah.
You're standing on a starbase. There's consoles. And the doctor there's no holographic projection in that room, so you have to talk to him on the screen.
Right, of course.
He gives you the briefing. And then you get ushered into a shuttle, which is like an auditorium.
Yeah.
And then like – the shuttle, like, you know, the front gets broken off and you get the 4D movie.
Oh, fuck.
It's 3D glasses. Yeah.
This sounds dangerously like interactive theater.
Why did they do away with the Star Trek experience at the Las Vegas Hilton? It was great.
Make enough money.
I used to love sitting around in Quark's bar and Klingons come up and hassle you and stuff. It was fucking brilliant.
I don't want to be hassled.
I want to get rich like Richie Rich and just have that be my house. Like just actors that are paid by me.
Every morning
Charlie
you wake
Sheen,
up and get Klingon
that's
makeup.
That's what I'd be spending my money on.
You buy all the props.
I would turn my
would be the Duras sisters.
Yes, I would turn my mansion into Deep Space Nine, and I would have people that are just paid all day to role play as Klingons and Romulans and stuff.
Right,
and I'd have writers. Writers that would work on scripts and stuff. It would be like my own holodeck.
Every morning you would wake up and you'd be like, oh, today I think I'm going to be Romulan.
Yes.
And Dorian today. Break out the antenna, motherfuckers.
Where you hire some good you know, a good acting troupe that can do like impromptu acting.
Yeah.
And then if they mess up the canon of your house, you're
like, right. That's not canon. You have been expelled.
Yeah. A teleporter accident.
The
every
guys
time.
At that Las Vegas Hilton that wanted the best deal were the guys that played the Ferengi because it was in their role playing that they wouldn't work for it. They would always work for tips. Like you'd say, oh, can we get a picture of you Ferengi guys? And they'd go, ah, what's in it for us, human? You know, and like you would have to give them money. But that was totally in character because Ferengis are profit driven.
Gold press latinum.
Yes. Huh. You have to give them your gold press latinum.
I'm trying to think what my best theme park experience has been.
Do you like the Tower of Terror?
I took Gina on that without telling her it was a drop.
Oh, really? That's my favorite ride.
She was like, what's this Tower of Terror thing? I was like, oh, you'll tell me. It's like a haunted house with a 10-story drop.
The other thing they have over there at California Adventure, which is, you know, the other park that they built.
Did you do California Adventure?
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't do it this weekend, but we've done it many times before because that's where Tower of Terror is.
You know, I'm going to go.
California Screaming is there, which is the best roller coaster. And also the Grizzly River Rapids, which is the big
shaky.
Kind of, it's like, you know, you're in kind of like a circular.
Oh, right.
There's eight of you in a big circular
craft. Yes.
That just basically goes down this, you know, crazy whitewater rapid and you get soaked.
So can
it's awesome.
Can I just say that California Adventure, like as a theme for a theme park, seems like the shittiest theme park ever. Like, oh, I'm going to get on the Nevada Exploration ride.
No, it's good though.
People go to Disneyland. Most people who go to Disneyland aren't from California.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised you don't appreciate this. I mean, California is a pretty exotic location.
I get that.
You know,
if you're from Japan or something, I can see that. But I mean, the thing I don't like, are there real roller coasters there? Do they have upside down roller coasters?
They have
you
have California Screaming, which is probably the biggest and best roller coaster in the entire California Disney.
But I mean, like, how does it compare to like one of those 12 loop-de-loop vortex things?
That's
Six
what
Flags
it's like. It's fucking massive and it's super far. I mean, you get shot out of a gun.
Okay.
I mean, it's really fast, and it has all the twists and turns and 360.
So it's real roller coasters. It's not like Space Mountain. Because Space Mountain's all...
No, it's,
like,
it's massive.
Have you ever read Space Mountain in when the lights are on?
No, I didn't.
It is not scary at all.
I didn't know they even did that.
Yeah, they do it. Like, sometimes if something's broken...
I've seen pictures of it inside.
I've ridden it when the lights are on, and it is the least scary thing ever.
That's not fun at all.
No. Actually, it is a little bit scary because there's basically the headroom above it.
Yeah.
There's a very specific reason they tell you to keep your hands down.
Oh, really? There's not much headroom?
Not much headroom.
Huh.
And it constantly – it's like one of those ones where you're going straight and then you do like a hard 90-degree twist left and go straight down.
I can never be one of those people that puts their hands out because I always feel like I'm going to be the guy whose hand gets chopped off.
You're the death grip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like when I was a kid, I used to really like big, scary, terrifying roller coasters, especially the big old wooden ones, the ones that feel like the whole thing's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of it's not that exciting anymore. I don't like waiting in lines.
I mean, it's interesting. We haven't even really veered that far off the beaten track here, I think, because, you know, the whole concept of like Imagineering and all that stuff is really interesting.
Oh, I love that stuff.
It's all based in technology. What do you think the theme park of the future will be like? Where do they go next with these rides and these experiences?
You've seen The Matrix, right?
Yeah.
You just jam the spike in the back of your head all of a sudden it's all in your brain.
Well, you know, right now they're all moving toward like the 3D stuff. Like, you know, they're changing Universal Studios. The King Kong ride is now 3D.
I've done that new King Kong ride and I didn't think it was that great.
Yeah. It's not as good as the animatronic giant King Kong. You know, not as thrilling, but... Awesome.
No, I want the thing that's really in front of me, not just something projected on a
screen. That shit's expensive. Projections are cheap.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing is I think that the time of the theme park might be passing.
You think?
I mean, I think...
No way. That's something you can never replicate.
Like the way the arcade, like video arcades went away because the home experience got better?
I mean, I think it's not that the home experience gets better.
You're never going to have Tower of Terror in your backyard, though.
Yeah, but it's always going to look hokey. I mean, when you look at Tower of Terror... Some of that stuff looks real hokey. Like the stuff when they execute well, and I think Disney is one of the only places that really executes well because like all the Six Flags is in Great Americas and all that shit.
Pretty
people
shitty.
Just go for the roller coasters, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're there, nobody's going for the shooting gallery or the bullshit haunted house or any of that. Like the Haunted Mansion, if you think about that as 50s technology that they've then updated, I mean, it is unfucking believable.
Yeah.
That stuff is really good. The Hall of Presidents, pretty hokey. Mm-hmm. Cool. But hokey.
Yeah.
And I think that – I mean I don't think hokey sells anymore. I mean I think people are – like people's expectations from the rise of CG and stuff like that in movies have lowered their tolerance for robot sharks. And I mean it's a little sad but also not entirely unexpected.
Well, we just have to wait for the next leap in technology because you're right. Like go to the Pirates of the Caribbean. It's the same animatronics they had 50 years ago.
Well, no, not anymore though. They Johnny Depped it.
Yes, they did update it, but it doesn't look that great. But like, for example, Star Tours right now is being completely redone.
Right.
It's one of the oldest rides there. It's been around since the 70s, and it's not that great anymore. So I'd be interested to see now what Star Tours is like now with the technology that we have now.
But it's going to still be all just 3D shit that – I mean 3D and
probably
hydraulics.
It's going to be fucking Jar Jar bullshit as well.
Yeah, fuck that. I don't want Jar Jar in my Star Tours. I want R2 and C-3PO. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the roller coasters are exciting, but there's only so much shit you can do to the human body before you start killing people and giving them whiplash.
Right.
You know, when you have to put your head in a vice before you get on the roller coaster, that is of low interest to the vast majority of the population. The thing is that, like, the rides that I love, like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride and the what? You got a problem with Mr. Toad?
Which one is Mr. Toad?
That
one is not – Mr. Toad's Wild Ride is like
– Mr. Toad's Wild Ride is one of the first things I remember. Like not just as rides but as a human being.
That is like a gentle ride for very, very small children.
That is you're going around a – like
it's a little startling.
Small house. No way.
The Disneyland one might be different than the Disney World one. The Disney World one recaps Wind in the Willows.
Like, I don't think I've been on
it. Like you're in the car. Time. You're bopping around.
Okay, Disneyland has
like there's a chase
rides, storybook rides.
And this is not
all
a,
super lame.
This is not. Yeah. This is not like It's a Small World.
No,
okay. It's a little more active than It's a Small World at Disney World.
Okay,
although I think it's gone now. I don't think Mr. Toad exists anymore.
It's still there at Disneyland.
Okay, but I don't know. I mean, I don't see kids older when kids are old enough to not appreciate the Dumbo ride. I don't know that they're going to be into the kind of wussy roller coasters that Disney has.
Mm. I think kids are always going to be appreciative of that.
Well, I mean, and then there is the wild card is, of course, people go there because kids get to go there because they get to meet. It's like meeting Santa Claus. So, you know, if your kids are listening, you probably want to turn off right now. But you know, little girls, when we went on that Disney cruise, I have never seen anything like the lines for the little girls who wanted to meet the princesses. You know, see, Ariel, this is the thing. Belle, so, like, I'm not that shit. So it's based on characters, not necessarily the themes.
I've been to these other theme parks like Magic Mountain, thing, where they have where it's all extreme roller coasters, and right. like that, those rides are fun.
That's a teenager theme park.
There's walking around that theme park, I think, is actually kind of lame. Like, I like Disneyland because even when you're not on the rides, this is going to sound kind of sad, but like, I feel like you're always surrounded by the magic of that world.
Well, that's
like,
the
just
thing
walking
that they
down
do.
Main Street in Disneyland is great. It's just because you feel this is so fun.
And that's the thing that they do that's amazing. I mean, the attention to detail in Disneyland from the Imagineering team, like there was an article a few years ago that I read about the guy who designed the sound system for Disney World and Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, up until the point that they did that, everybody said it's impossible to have something that plays background music in an outdoor area where the relative volume level is the same through the entire park.
Right.
Until the dude at Disney World, who worked for the Imagineers or Disneyland, figured out how to do it by like mapping the high and low points in the loud and quiet places and figuring out where to put the speakers so that, you know, everything sounds awesome. And it's always, you know, there's no loud spots
in Disney.
There's consistent
background music wherever you go. Yeah.
It's just nonstop people singing the Pirates of the Caribbean song.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that stuff is really cool. I do like Disney World. But I have no time for Six Flags and Great America.
My favorite thing at Disney.
Mainly because of the lines, though, really.
My favorite thing is Jedi China Academy. My second favorite thing, like the thing that's become a staple for me now, is right inside Main Street, right? As you walk down Main Street, there's a little movie theater that you walk in. It's like a little rotunda in the center, and they have like six screens around it.
Oh.
And they're just playing, like, you know, Steamboat Willie and just
all
the classic, really early, like, you know, Oscar the Lucky Rabbit and all that. Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, sorry. Like true old school classic Disney classics just running all the time.
All the stuff from Epic Mickey.
Yes. All the really archival stuff.
Yeah.
And it's completely free. And there's usually not that many people in there because kids aren't interested in
Who fucking cares about black and white cartoons?
But you can go in there and watch, you know, I'll just watch Steamboat Willie all the way through.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love that stuff. And I the Disney stuff is pretty amazing. But I mean, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to play with kids that grew up with video games.
I mean, I'm not seeing any indication. I mean, we're deep into that generation now. I'm not seeing any indication of like 8-year-old kids that are bored at Disneyland.
No. That's definitely true. That's definitely true. But you don't see any 12-year-old, 15-year-old kids. Don't see that many.
Oh, what, teenagers at Disneyland? Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Probably all there.
I think they're probably a bit more. I think they probably are a bit more, you know, ironic about it. Or, oh, this is so lame. But like they're actually kind of enjoying it.
Yeah, secretly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Disney.
It's great.
I guess that's the end of the podcast.
You gotta go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday though. Like you can't on the weekends, especially in the summertime. Like now, I mean, forget about it,
dude. If they did a day where they let in a 16th of the normal people and charge you 16 times as much to get in, I would totally do that.
I would pay.
I fucking hate waiting in lines.
Oh, it's the
that's
worst.
The other thing that's bad for me with
it's
Disney.
The worst.
I mean, like the roller coaster parks. If they would do that, and you could go in and not like, I went to Great America one day on a friends and family day.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was just like park employees and friends.
Yeah.
And you basically could walk onto whatever roller coasters and shit you wanted. That was awesome.
Yeah.
It also ruined theme parks forever for me, I think.
Yeah.
Norm's dying over there. He's coughing something fierce. Are you okay?
Yep.
You need some water?
I'm good.
Should we finish the podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, let's let Norm die in peace.
Okay. I want to get lunch. I'm hungry.
I'm starving.
The honors.
You know, you say, hey, should we start the show?
Hey, let's start the show.
Welcome to This Is Only a Test. This is... Well, if I'm not going to say what episode it is,
so you've thrown yourself off already.
I don't know what the. Well, welcome to This Is Only.
Why don't you just say the date? It's
March 9th, 20.
Yeah, this is welcome to Only Test. It's March 8th. Blah blah blah.
Maybe I lead off with it's March 8th, March 9th. I think actually it's March 9, 2011. Welcome to This Is Only a Test. And then
however you're the man. However
I don't
you want
know.
To do it.
Okay, so do the welcome thing again. The starting thing.